them are put in front of you. Well, they have done that yesterday. We just have to go to the final on it so that it can go into the normal processes of Parliament and go on its way towards the National Council of Provinces. And then if it's gone towards the National Council of Provinces, I wanted to find a buyer this time. Small glitch, just getting computers right so that it can be able to move away. But I don't think it should disturb us in the way to deal with it. Is my phone number available to this? Not yet. So this is about the desirability of the field again. One page it says, now, members of parliament, I just want to point first in page one. And then after that, we have the council. And after the council, we have an extensive engagement with AMSCO. We must thank that all the different people that are representing the different community parties that are in front of us. The chairperson of the of AMSCO is around with his acting CEO. We've got General Nkonyane representing the council is also here. So you feel welcome, gentlemen. You relax. Don't worry about the media. They are engaging me. There's no tribunal. Honorable member, that Mlangeni, if you find the bill, then you say I'm a citizen. Honorable member, did you all have, are you all having the bill in front of you? It's not a long process. We are money at a cool hour. 100 metric. Can go to. Why was on your phone now? Your phone would say, Yan Piribit, I'm sorry. I'm trying to put the department here. Do you have the bill in front of you, Honorable Purnavas? No. You are seated next to the state law advisor there. What I want to check with page one, or to say close one, is there anything that has been said that has been changed? Members who have raised their objections, they know that I've said that the objections will be accommodated within the report that will be presented in front of Parliament. Before I sign, I just want to make sure that members have familiarized themselves with the bill as it stands now. It's called the B bill, capturing all the amendments that have been put into place. If you read this, how it has been presented, it is said, as amended by the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, the English text is the official text of the bill. This is called B11B/2010. That's the bill that we are agreeing on. Unless there's an identification of a problem that members.
Okay, on page 3, there's a huge problem.
There's what?
On page 3, close 2. We didn't agree on that one.
The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act, Military Command of the Defense Force. That one, I know that they engage you and you gave up on it, but you have put in your objections and have noted that. That I've put in as part of the report. I know on 16th, if we come to 6, Title 4, the amendment of Section 53. Yeah. That's what your objections are, Honorable David Minnick. Yes, we'll take note of your objection. And then on Section 5, that's the 55, that's a small addition that has been put in. Together, that we have only put in Section 55 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection after subsection 2. That's 3. No objection. Then we have the longest one, clause 6. I know that the DA has an objection on 62H. That would be noted. And then you go to continues up until to 62L. No queries. And then you go to amendment of section 104. And then we have got the transitional provision, which is clause 7 and clause 8. And then the title has been amended. If that covers you, honorable members, it means the bill has been agreed on. We will then read the normal processes and we finish with it. We process it towards going to Parliament, to the National Council of Provinces. As I said, Honorable David, the opportunity of asking others in the National Council of Provinces to help you with your arguments is still standing. It's in constitutional court, David, I'm ready for that one. But what we are saying in reading the report, of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans on the Defense Amendment Bill, B11, 2010, National Assembly, Section 75, dated 13 October 2010. The Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, having considered the subject of the Defense Amendment Bill, B11, 2010, National Assembly, Section 75, refer to it and classify by the joint taking mechanism as a section of 75B, report the bill with the amendment B11A/2010. That's what is going on and what we're agreeing upon. Because we did go through the whole process yesterday, voting and everything, it seems to see there's nobody objecting. We have concluded on this particular matter. Is that correct?
Okay.
So the meeting is proceeding as we have agreed yesterday. It is that Honorable Patel, it started 7 minutes past 2. So I suppose it started at 2 o'clock. So the first report that we are taking in, members, it is the report of the council. I hope members have been able to go through that particular report. Here's the council. Council of Good Hope's annual report. Did you all receive the information in relation to this? Start out with how many information? Okay. Yes, sir.
Chair, thank you. I just want some clarity now, because yesterday it was said in a committee meeting that the minister didn't see these reports. Now, I'd like to know what is the status of the reports. We had the argument on the fact that they are tabled, but the fact that it was said that the minister didn't see these reports, I would just like to have clarification. It had it been approved by the minister, without seeing it, because, you know, we had a situation in South African politics before in the 70s where the Minister of Finance said he only signed the check but didn't see what he signed. So I just want to know the status on that aspect. Thank you, Chair.
No, I'll clarify it. The minister sent two letters to me today to clarify her position about the matter that was raised. on the first matter that related to, she says, dear Mr. Boy, if you want the 2009 annual report of AMSCO and the Council of Good Hope, 13 October 2010. Thank you for your letter in the above regard dated 11 October 2010. I would like to confirm that the appearance and briefing of, to the Portfolio Committee in, on Defense and Military Veterans by AMSCO and the Customs Control Board of their annual report 2009-2010 will take place as planned tomorrow as per the committee schedule. Senior management of both entities arrived in Cape Town today and will present their annual report to the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans as requested in your letter 11 October 2010. It has been brought to my attention that a verbal request to postpone a discussion on the annual report was tabled in the Portfolio Committee. I want to state categorically that no, in a big way, such a request was made by me to the Portfolio Committee at any stage. Any communication from myself to the Portfolio Committee is always in writing and signed by myself. I was therefore very surprised that such a matter was discovered by the Portfolio Committee. So that's what, so it does say quite clearly that the meeting doesn't have any problem. The meeting has to proceed. And communication has taken place between myself and the ministry. As I said yesterday, the meeting has to proceed. It has to start to go. So this is what the minister just gave me to clarify the matter itself. Can I also read before report on the briefing on the 2009 annual report of the Department of Defense? The Auditor General's report of the financial year were discussed and adopted by Cabinet. It would therefore be appreciated if you could be. This is a separate matter now, but she did send in that she has really approved, and the complaint that was raised yesterday was not born out of fact. So,
thank you, Chair. Chair, then I would suggest that this committee take further steps on the matter as far as the officials who made the request. Because the officials came to this committee, said that the minister didn't see the reports. And I mean, as I said, if I was the minister, I would have fired them. But at least, how can officials come to this committee putting forward a request on behalf of the minister? And now it seems that the minister didn't even know about it. I will really ask that there should be an investigation, that officials can realize that we are not playing games. As one of the honorable members had said yesterday, this is serious business. And we cannot tolerate that. Thank you, Chair.
That's what Mr. Khorinovat is presenting to front. Honorable Stella.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just an addition to what Honorable Khorinovat has said, that let this meeting know that upon receiving the letter from the minister explaining her position and knowledge with regard to the verbal communique that we received yesterday, it is important that in the near future, we don't have any communication that is verbal from officials. If the minister wants to communicate, she must do so in writing, as she is claiming that she does that. Therefore, we must not allow any official to come and tell us the minister has said that, or we are going to continuously be misled. Thanks, sir.
Going along with that, Honorable Khorinovat is saying that we should investigate this matter and come to conclude it. Is that what they are saying?
Chairperson, not in total, because the area of investigations, I don't think we agree with that. But the minister, it's in her authority to apply disciplinary measures to the person if she so feels deemed to.
Are you going along with that, Mr.
Khorinovat? No, we are saying that, Chairperson, we are not supporting the matter of the investigations.
Okay.
We are saying that is a matter that lies in the hands of the minister.
Okay. But you stand on him when he says that we need to attend to the matter and just not leave it like that. Is that correct, Mr. Khorinovat?
Chairperson, I mean, when I say investigator, I mean we're not investigating committee, and surely we cannot take disciplinary steps. I understand we have limitations as far as that is concerned, although I would like to have such authorities, but that is what I mean by that, Chairperson. At least there should be a written explanation why this was said. When it comes from the department, it doesn't matter, but what I want to ask the committee is that we want an explanation in writing about the situation as I've mentioned. At least that is what we want, and that's what I actually mean by investigating. I don't think that we have to appoint investigators to investigate, but at least that we get a good explanation about it. Thanks.
Indeed. Chair, I wonder whether the committee are in fact not missing the point. The question here is in fact whether the minister has read the annual report.
Okay, look, he's an honorable man. No, I think, are you saying it in serious note or are you just pulling my leg?
I'm saying it
seriously. Mr. Kekan?
Sorry, I thought in the letter that you read, it was said that the executive has adopted it, which means if the executive has adopted it, then it means the minister has read, because she's part of the executive. On the other point about the official, I would suggest, I don't know if this will satisfy Mr. Khulalalpal. I'll suggest that we give a warning to the official that in the future we don't expect them to give us a contradictory position and say this is on behalf of the minister, and the minister says no, that is not the case. So this is the first warning, and in the future would persist that more harsher action take place. I'm just saying that because we do really have a lot of business to address here, and we shouldn't be derailed. But give them the first warning next time, give a tip.
Rebecca, we've got General Nongonyan on behalf of the castle. We do have two documents that have been separated, I mean, situated. Can we allow you to do your presentation, General Nongonyan?
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members of the committee. I'm Major General Nongonyan, the Chief of Logistics of the National Defense Force, and representing the Minister in the Castle Control Board as the chairperson. And with me here is the asset, or the fixed asset, or fixed heritage asset, the manager, Ms. Achenbach. And the person controlling the computer there is Captain Mocker, who is the manager of the castle. And I've got two members.
If I can just say you, General Kenya, make sure that you talk to the mic. I know General Mpashane very well, but he must not intimidate you. Don't worry. Just talk into the mic. Don't look at him. Mpashane, don't intimidate members.
And I have two members from the board, Mr. Hudson Bennett, who represent the Cape Town Regional Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and who's also our acting CFO. And with him is Advocate David Mitchell, who's a member appointed by the Minister representing the Department of Defense. As an introduction, I can indicate that the castle again in the financial year 09-10 has had a very successful year, ending up with an unqualified audit report. And without wasting any time, I'll just go directly to the presentation, starting with the aim of the presentation, being to report to the Portfolio Committee on Defense on the Castle of Good Hope on the annual report of financial year 09-10. And the scope will be the introduction, the management report, the performance information, corporate governance, HR management, an auditor general report, ending up with additional questions which were put forward to us coming from the committee. As an introduction, I'll start first with the background. The introduction addresses the regulatory framework, why we're submitting or presenting this report to you, which is guided by the PFMA, and also all the applicable acts which are regulating the management and the operation of the castle. Most of those acts are listed from the Constitution up to the Defense Endowment Properties Act. And then we come to the composition of the castle, which was one of the guidelines given by the Portfolio Committee in terms of the appointment of the members of the board. We are fully, except for one member who was participating and withdrawn, and myself as a chairperson, and all the members from the Cape Town Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Iziko Museum of Cape Town, the Department of Public Works, South African Heritage Resource Agency, and the commanding officer of the support base, Western Cape, the City of Cape Town, the South African Tourism Board representative who has withdrawn, and the two representatives from the Ministry of Defense, Mr. David Mitchell being one of them, and the representative from the Western Provincial Legislature. And there's only one member who later on I'll explain, the Executive Director, who I still have to appoint, but that will be explained at a later stage. And then Captain Mokel, who's the Secretary of the Board. I won't go through the vision. The vision is as stated, the vision and mission of the castle. What I will just draw your attention to is the issue of the responsibility of the castle, that our main responsibility is to manage the castle in terms of the preparing the plans, executing the plans for the castle, monitoring and controlling all the plans of the castle.
according to the legislations which I've already mentioned. Now go over to the management report. And with the management report, the first issue which I'll like to draw your attention to is the events which took place at the castle. The first one, which was the participation of the castle in the second opening of the parliament in June 2009. And then the second one where we participated was the hosting of the Not Alone exhibition, which focused on AIDS awareness, which was mainly the project of Iziko Museum. And then the third one was the Cape Town Military Tattoo, which is an annual event which takes place at the castle. This one took place between the 19th and the 21st of November 2009. And then some of the events which are the main drivers of this thing of revenue generation in the castle, it's events which take place like the film and the fashion school and some of the parades, military parades, which take place at the castle. Those are the events which take place throughout the year. And then the number of visitors, which is the main the driver of revenue, went down between 2009-10 in comparison to the previous year, that is 2008-09. And the reason being, of course, the recession, but that did not have any impact on the income of the castle. And then, with regards to the daily management of the castle, I can indicate that the castle continues to manage with limited resources. When it comes to facilities management, this is one of the areas which we are having serious challenges because there is not dedicated funding for the maintenance of the castle. We depend mainly on the resources coming from the revenues that coming from the visitors and some of the rentals, the revenue which we receive. But the scale or the magnitude of the repairs which are supposed to take place at the castle far or overweigh the resources which we have or the income which we have. We have taken some measures in trying to address that particular challenge, mainly the first one being the assistance which we received from the public works. Another issue which I can indicate on the issue of our management, especially with the maintenance, is the preventative maintenance, which is done mainly by the management of the castle, the Captain Mokel, which is one of his primary focus areas. And also, I can also indicate that the DPW has already funded and appointed a heritage consultant to do the survey of the overall maintenance of the castle. And then on the issues of non-compliance, these are the areas which were highlighted by the portfolio committee. We have adhered to those guidelines in with respect to the appointments of the members of the board, as I indicated in the introduction, that we have all the 100% distinct appointments except for the appointment of the executive director, which is highly dependent on the sustainability of the castle in raising its own revenues. And then we have developed a risk management policy. We're just about to finalize the risk management plan. But this is an ongoing issue which is managed by the board. There are areas which were requested or were instructed by the portfolio committee, the recommendations which we have already implemented. We have finalized the development of a strategic plan. We have also developed some objectives with later on, I'll indicate the comments of the Auditor General with respect to the strategic plan. The additional sources, we have already put up some plans with respect to the financial sustainability of the castle. It was one of the guidelines which were given by the portfolio committee with respect to the financial sustainability of the castle, and we indicated that one of the areas which were focusing on was the migration of the head package from the army support base over to the castle. Those negotiations are still ongoing. With respect to international best practice, we did a study on the benchmarking with the other institutions internationally, mainly the fortifications in Malta. That study has been done, and we're busy now looking at how we can implement some of the recommendations which were presented coming out of that particular report. We have dedicated people who are looking at the drawing up of the immovable military heritage asset plan, as it was, the one of the guidelines which were given by the portfolio committee. Some of the challenges which I must indicate, the main one is the sustainability of the castle. The castle as it stands right now doesn't have any dedicated funds to manage it. The only option available to the castle or to the castle control board is its own to come up with plans to have a program of self-sustainability. We have engaged the Defence Force. Personally, I've engaged the Defence Force, the Army, which is the main role player in trying to migrate, especially the head packages and some of the areas or some of the clubs which are operating at the castle, which are supposed to be migrated over to the castle control board. Those negotiations are still ongoing, and we hope will be finalized during the course of the current financial year. I'll move over to the performance information with the highlights. One of the areas which was an instruction by the Portfolio Committee and the Auditor General was the issue of appointment of an internal the Auditor Committee. We have done that. We have appointed Mazas as our internal auditors. We have also established an audit committee within the castle management. And the castle board has also, according to the Auditor General, there are some loopholes or some weaknesses in the development of the strategic plan. In the current year, we are focusing on that, but already we have a strategic plan in place, although it's not up to the required standard as indicated by the Auditor General, but we have already developed this in a strategic plan, which is one of the highlights. It was in the previous years, but we feel that it's one of the highlights which we must communicate. The challenges, there are challenges, again, as indicated, it was mainly the self-sustainability and the maintenance of the castle. And the second part is the departmental support. The major support comes from the SNDF, mainly from the Army Support Base, Western Cape, and the Chief of Logistics, the Logistics Division, being myself and some of my support listening staff. That's the main support that coming from the Department of Defense. That's the area which in any of the appreciation which we can do in future for the sustainability of the castle must be taken seriously into consideration. So those support from the department be withdrawn. The financial division also has deployed some of its members to help us in ensuring that our financial plans and some of the financial management systems have some integrity and are in line with the PFMA. This is just the strategic plan and some of its objectives. And the overall strategic plan is it's in your annual report. I wouldn't go through it. It's quite a lengthy strategic plan. But if there are any questions, I'll address them during the discussion period. With regard to corporate the governance, the council also planned the jurisdictional control on the council control board. And the council again is established according to the Council Management Act. We have about five meetings, or we held five meetings throughout the 09-10 period. And all vacancies on the board, with the exception of that of the executive director, have been filled. Next one.
Any problem?
I'm just getting some of my papers. With regard to corporate governance, we have developed an HR management plan. We have also developed a conservation management plan. We have also managed to develop a maintenance plan. And we have also developed a framework for materiality and significance during the period. And one thing to mention with regards to the HR plan is that the council has about a staff of about 18 members. And out of that, 10 are in the payroll of the department. Only 8 of those members are paid from the payroll of the council. It's not a really complicated human resource management plan. It is just a plan which has been prepared according to the Public Service Act. And the conservation management plan, that plan has also been prepared, which is according to the Heritage Act, and also the maintenance plan, which I've already alluded to in the previous listening slide, which is the main focus of the castle management of the castle management. As indicated again, I indicated that we have established the audit committee, and the committee reports have compiled as indicated again in the annual report. They have also put forward their report, which indicates that we have improved in our financial management, and we have improved in our establishment of internal controls within the castle. We have also developed the risk management plan and policies, which was also one of the guidelines given by the portfolio committee. I've already alluded to the human resource management plan. The area which is very important, which I would like to draw attention to, is the report of the Auditor General. As you can see in your annual financial report, it's that paragraph 7 indicated that the Auditor General has no, he feels that he cannot qualify our statement, which I think is one of the achievement for the Castle Control Board, and in light of the challenges they have, in, especially with regard to the availability of personnel and the availability of resources. some of the areas which they have indicated the findings of non-compliance, the report or the responses of the audit committee indicates that those areas will be addressed through in the next financial year, which is the present one, 10-11. But some others are areas which there is some contradiction on some the interpretation of the Act, that is the Cattle Management Act, where there is some contradiction between the interpretation of the Cattle Management Act and the PFMA. But otherwise, there are no serious comments of non-compliance from the Auditor General. These are some of the additional questions which we received coming from the Portfolio Committee with respect to the appointment of the Executive Director and the CFO. As I indicated in the introduction, is that the present acting CFO is Mr. Hudson Bennett, who is an accountant, is a qualified accountant. And the Executive Director has indicated that it's highly dependent on the council raising enough resources or finances in order to be able to pay for the appointment of an executive director. And there was a question on the issue of the lottery board allocation. And this allocation was given or was allocated to the foundation, which is the Castle Military Museum Foundation. It is operating and its responsibility is to man the museum at the castle. But it is not under the Castle Control Board. It reports directly or it's managed as a foundation, and it's mostly accountable for its own financial activities to the Lottery Control Board. And efforts to improve visitors to the castle, we took part in most of the activities with the city of Cape Town during the FIFA World Cup. And in trying to draw or increase the awareness of the visitors, which was done very successfully, and we have also marketed the castle to most of the Western Cape schools. And there was a question on the replication of non-compliance matters. The matters, as I've indicated in my presentation, most of the issues which were raised by the portfolio committee, those have been addressed except for the appointment of the executive director. And with regard to the preventative maintenance matters, as indicated again, and we have a part-time specialist that the contractor has been appointed, and that is the a project which we have had an assistance from the Department of Public Works. There's no private public-private partnership with regards to the castle. We have developed, not formalized the fraud prevention plan, but this has been one of the recommendations which has been given by the audit committee in developing a fraud a prevention plan, which we are going to develop, or we have already started that process of developing a fraud prevention plan with regards to the present financial year. But as indicated also by the Auditor General, we don't have a formalized fraud prevention plan within the management of the castle. The strategic plan, we have already also developed the strategic plan, but we are also taking note during the present kind of financial year that we are going to develop it according to the guidelines given by the Auditor General, mainly on the areas of the developing measurable objectives and the measures to manage the plan. I think that's come to the end of the presentation.
That's the submission from General Nkonyane. Does members of parliament have any questions? Oh, Honorable Kekana.
Chair, in this instance, you have to forgive my ignorance.
This castle in the past used to be the place for the governor and defend. There was a fortress there. We were talking many, many years ago. To date, does it... Sorry? There you are. Geez. Yeah. Now, then it had a military purpose. Today, does it still serve? And I've said you must excuse my ignorance because maybe it can back up the Navy or something. Does it still have a military purpose? Because otherwise, I'll suggest it goes to Minister of Tourism or Minister of Arts and Culture and Heritage. You know, like Robben Island is no more under Minister of Presence because we've got Ntate Langeni here next to me, so it is serving a different purpose and not the original one. That's the question. Does it serve the military purpose still to be under defense, to make it deserve being under defense?
Is there any other member who's got a question? Honorable?
Yes, Chairperson, I think my first question is almost the same as David Gekana. You know, if you look at the vision, mission of this castle, maybe I'm new here, I'm not sure why is it still under the defense. Something must be done. I mean, they are even struggling to get finances. Defense doesn't have time for them because they are there for luxury tourism and all those things. And I'm not sure why are they under defense. But the other thing that I don't understand, Mr. It is Major General Nkonyane. It's actually from the defense. There is no one like the CFO that is actually looking after the castle. So that's the biggest problem because this guy is just from the board actually. It's not a man running operation every day or is it running operation. He's the chairperson of the board and I don't understand why is it still him in charge of this thing. So somewhere they must just employ somebody. Chairperson, can we go to the finances? Let's go to page 36.
Of which document?
The annual report.
Okay.
I just don't understand the question. The spending, especially on administrative expenses. Last year on advertising, they spent 66,000. This year they spent 92,000. And we had uniform flags and gunpowder from 16 million to 99. Maybe they should explain there. And even the museum expenses from 100,000 to 178,000. What were those increases? Just maybe to get the studies on those increases. It's just a huge increase.
Sorry. Can I have Honorable Toro?
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Comrade Chairperson, my question is that 130,716 visitors to Kashmir. I just find out this number of visitors is a South African or it's international. And on this number, it's a month or this 130,716
visitors
a year.
Thank you, Chair. The council can answer for themselves, but I just want to make sure I presume that we still have some military officers in the council. I understand we don't have to defend the Cape anymore. The Cape can defend itself. But what I want to know, Chairperson, and can I say I took visitors twice to the castle in the previous or in the financial year and so on. The buckets situation, if I understand it correctly, you're trying to get it, it's been sourced out at the moment. Or do I understand it incorrectly? Is it back with the castle? And how many functions then do you have there more or less? And do we really generate a lot of funds from that? And then can I just ask, I know that will be in the next financial year, Was there quite an increase with the FIFA World Soccer Cup of visitors to the castle? My last question is, why do you only promote it amongst the Western Cape schools? Why not all schools in South Africa? Because I think the castle is quite an asset. It's quite historical. And I know in my area, I'm from the Northwest. People, if they talk about the Cape, they want to know about the castle. Why do we only limit it to the Western Cape schools? I think we should go broader. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chair. It seems that from the presentation that the castle are under strain, are just getting by. And so the question arises, what is the plan to make the castle sustainable, and why is it that a public-private partnership...
If you can just raise your voice, I know you can talk harder than what you're doing.
Why is it that a public-private partnership arrangement has not been considered in the past? Or if it has, why has that option been rejected? I think also just from the financial side, why is it that an executive director and chief financial officer have not been appointed?
I'll give you an opportunity to answer.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll answer some of the questions, and the ones which are very specific and technical, I'll just send them over to the manager of the castle. I'll start with the last one, coming from the Honorable Member Menel. It has to do with what are the plans to make it sustainable. And why not the triple Ds? When it comes to sustainability, we have explored some of the options available, and one of them was the migration of the management of the head packages. The head package is one of the establishment which has one of the major the revenue generation at this project within the castle. But that has not been done very aggressively, which is one of my intentions as a chairperson of the board, to ensure that we succeed in migrating the head package from that. I think this will also answer one of the honorable members as to what is the status of the head package. The head package is managed by one of the army clubs. It is not outsourced. It because of the nature of how the castle is managed by the thing on some of the agreements which were had between the army and the castle, the head package was transferred over to the management by management of the club. We haven't taken or considered the triple P's, but I think that will be one of the areas which I think will be a little bit complex for the board to consider. We feel that if we have the head package and some of the establishments which are operating within the castle, we can be able to attain a certain level of sustainability. So I think the first phase, when it comes to sustainability, is to ensure that we manage to migrate the head package to come under the direct management of the castle control board. And the first question had to do with the relevance of the castle in the defense mandate. It's correct that the castle does not or is not any or doesn't offer any capability enhancement of the defense force. It's a heritage site, a cultural heritage site, and is governed according to the act, you know, governing heritage sites. But it's very, very critical in the history of the military. It's a very, very critical establishment in maintaining the culture and the history of the military. In the past, a year or two, there was attempts at migrating
the castle to the arts and culture. And it was the decision of this committee in consultation after having had some public forums and some meetings that that particular bill must be withdrawn by the Department of Defense. And we threw that the bill, the recommendations of the portfolio committee. As whether is it relevant in the whole mandate of the Defense Force, it is relevant only in the sense that it is the cultural side or the emotional side of the military establishment. With regard to the increase of the visitors in this current year or the past year and the expenses, that why the expenses increase, those are the technical issues which I'll hand over to Captain Mokel to address. And then the issue of not why to market it nationally, there's no a reason for that. I think the main focus was on the Western Province because of the proximity. But I think it's one of the suggestions which must be taken seriously into consideration. I think it's good that the manager here will take that into consideration in ensuring that he markets the castle nationally. And then I'll just ask the Captain Mokel to address the issues of the expenses and the visitors.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity. I think what's important to note is that our main objective is to preserve, and with the uniforms that we use at the castle for the key ceremony, and for a short while we had the changing of the guard as well, there's a company to sometimes, or a company or a platoon to be issued with uniforms for these ceremonies, and we've for the past 5 or 6 years managed to go through with the ceremonial uniforms that we had, and we had to upgrade. And I think we've spent quite a lot of money on the uniforms itself, because they are tailor-made and you have to go through that process of getting the correct uniform for that purpose, and that's why the cost has gone up considerably. We also implement the firing of the signal cannon, and maybe the answers the question of the schools that are approached nationally. Somehow, somewhere, the word has gone through to everybody that come to the castle and see the cannon being fired at 10 and 12, and everybody's very excited about it. And we're getting schools from the northwest and from as far as Mpumalanga and all over the country that come down in the holiday season to come and do tours of the castle, which is very promising. And we're also very fortunate that in some way the castle is written in the curriculum and mentioned somewhere as part of our history in South Africa. And so we're fortunate in that sense that we can sometimes ride on that as a marketing exercise, fortunately. But I do believe we can do more. I'll never lay down and say we are marketing ourselves. That will be arrogant from my side. But I think we've been very successful to date. What is promising, even though we have a decline in visitors numbers, what is promising is that the amount of school groups within the castle has increased. And we might see this year again. There's a tendency that it might will increase for the 2010-11 year.
Is there any board question or answer? But as the number of visitors.
Yes, well, interestingly enough, sorry, apologize for not answering that question. What is interesting is that in June we had an increase, but in July we had a less number of visitors to the castle. I think to a large extent we did go in a kind of a agreement with the FIFA fan park on the city, Grand Parade, which was to a certain degree successful. We got some marketing out of it. I was actually one evening I was there, and someone made a comment that he hasn't seen so many Dutch in Cape Town since 1652. And that is a kind of a little marketing to say, listen, you go to the castle, and the castle was the backdrop. Unfortunately, the positioning of the actual staging was actually to our disadvantage. But nevertheless, we did definitely benefit from it, not as much as we would have liked. And I think that was across the board.
I start with, you want to make a problem?
No, sir, but you didn't answer my question.
Okay. They feel that they have not yet answered the question on the finances, and they have not answered that at all. Is that right, Dr.?
No, sir, No, I was asking about the 180,750. I was saying this number, because if you see Northern Ireland, it's national and international. Now, I was asking this number of how
to pay that number correct.
That's right.
Okay. Honorable Patel, do you want to add a question?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think the presentation is quite detailed and very helpful. And the picture that is being painted here is that the castle is user-friendly, citizen-friendly, which is good. However, in the past, the castle used to allow the public to park on its grounds. And the last time, the public was barred from parking on the premises of the castle. I want to know if that rule is still in force, and if so, why? Because when the public had that access of parking, I think everybody spoke well about the castle, but now all of a sudden you said, no, the public should not park. I just want to know if that rule is still there.
Can I give you a chance? As I said, Honorable Kekan, and this one, it is after you've withdrawn it and said it must remain a military site where the history of different military things, it's old as 300 and, what, I don't want to tell you the years, 334. So we saw that it's a history that is quite vulnerable in terms of defense, and that history can be lost as you go on, as you march on as South Africans. That's why we then oppose as a defense committee then that we don't see any way it can be turned into a heritage site or something like a tourist only point in the way you are handling Robben Island. Let it remain within the defense. The defense in itself have got a history of its own. So it's very much important that castle must be able to embody that type of development and never leave it out and give it to some people who want to use it just as a tourist site. But let that history of how the defense has evolved over many years within the South African context, let it be enhanced by the presence of the castle. We had hope at some stage that the castle also would even take General Mpahlele's training suit from APLA and put it inside there, take Dato Mlangeni's training suit, even Mandela suits, and use that as part of the symbols of people who have gone through military, so that history is not just about the SADF, but it has to, since 1994, continue to evolve and shows the changes that has taken place within the SNDF. So it was on those bases that we then said, let that be withdrawn and be sent back, and let's focus on building the castle and improve the image of the castle and strengthen the castle to where it is and encourage people who are active into it to make sure that it remains within the defense and military veterans. So that's why they say that it's parliament, really it's a portfolio committee. We came to that conclusion that we can't destroy our own history. When we deal with the SNDF, we have to build on it. I mean, we're playing a very significant role in peacekeeping missions. It would be nice to put those symbols within, the castle, so that as our children also grow, they can see how military has played positive roles in assisting within the South African context. So that was the reason that motivated us to withdraw that particular bill in the third term of parliament. And that's how we have closed that particular debate. It's not really the department, it's ourselves as members of parliament. I was just giving the background to agree with the general that it is a decision of parliamentarians to withdraw that particular bill and maintain the history of our military within the castle itself. Can you answer the other questions? Can you help? The member says you have not answered his question in terms of the finances. Am I correct, Honorable Member? Okay.
Well, I think hopefully I've answered the question about the increase in the expenditure with uniforms and gunpowder, etc., with the expiring of the cannon. These were all in preparation for the World Cup as well, to have a, how can I say, a pomp and ceremony being presented to the, that's right. The 130,000 that we refer to is that's paying visitors to the castle, which is a system that we can monitor very effectively with paying visitors and monitoring it on a day-to-day basis, coming to a figure of 130,000 for the year. We'd obviously like to have 130,000 people per month, and that's what we strive for. But I think firstly and foremostly we're an educational institution as well, and we'd like to get the school kids to get to come to the castle, because you always hear them say, I was there when I was a kid, and hopefully they will come again, you know, and we get the second round. And it's a family outing, it's a family educational tour. We're busy currently with the Frontier War Displays, which is a very important part of our history, which is at the Castle Military Museum as well. So these are all things that we are moving towards, improving the castle and what it has to offer.
Can I control your tongue there? Yes. I know, you know, I see you've developed a good relationship with the General Kronobert. But I'll allow you to answer him. Were you asking a question, Honorable Kronobert? You can ask it.
No, Chairperson, I think my honorable colleague, he actually wanted to know how many of our foreigners do we know, because he's shaking his head. That was the essence of his question. But that's why I said I don't think it's controllable to see how many foreigners are there or not. So maybe it is.
Are you able to answer that question?
Well, all I can say is that we get an indication from the maps. We have maps in 7 different languages. And if you look at the selling of the maps, because most people buy a map, self-guided map of the castle. And, for instance, German is a map that's purchased quite a lot, so you've got a lot of German tourists coming to the castle. But the term in English between American and English, or British, is very difficult. But our biggest support, I believe, still remains our local people, especially over the festive season.
You know, I saw all the time many flags there. I'm not sure it's a 5 or 6 or 8, whatever. I don't understand the meaning. Maybe they can explain the meaning of that flag. Thank you very much.
The honorable member about parking, because it seems to be there.
I don't understand exactly the question with regards to, is it parking inside the castle, inside the walls, or on the perimeter of the castle? Because there's quite a lot of parking in and around the castle. Because there's Darling Street parking, and then there's parking inside the venue when you actually come, but we don't allow that. Apart from special requests when the president comes or a delegation comes and they ask permission. The reason for that is it's a very sensitive archaeological area that you're actually riding with a vehicle on. And sometimes some people don't obey the rules and regulations as to where you can or cannot drive. And it causes damage to the structures. I can show you, in actual fact, if you want to come and have a look, I can show you exactly where damages were caused because of vehicles coming in and out of the castle. Even the military statue, which we're hosting now at the end of the year, you know, we've got to be so careful where people move and how they bring the structures in when they set up. And it's all part of preservation. It's all part of being sensitive towards the building itself, which is, as you heard, 344 years old.
Well, I think he wants to know which part I'm referring to. Definitely the premises of the castle. For instance, when you go up, Cape Tech, I think, there's a stream or perhaps artificial, waterway and a small bridge. I think that site. So is it close to the public or not? And if for environmental purposes you decided to close it to the public, the explanation that you are giving me, I think would have done a great deal of good if it was given to the public, because
all I know is that overnight it was closed, you know, to the public without any explanation. But of course, if it is for the reasons that you are saying, it makes sense to me, but it should make sense to public more than to me, because I don't think the public, they have the public committee that you pick from time to time.
I think that you're referring to Darling Street parking, where the little hut, guard hut stands outside, and you drive over the moat and you park on the inside. That's parking for the castle. Yeah, that's for the visitors to the castle. We open it at 9 in the morning and we close it at 4 in the afternoon. Yes, we open. It's open every day, 7 days a week. But we close it after 4 for the simple reason it's a secured area. We want to secure the premises after hours, because our visiting hours is between 9 and 4 in the afternoon. So we have to, you know, and it's valuables. And like I always say, it's like the MasterCard advertisement, it's priceless. So if something has to happen in the castle after hours, that's why the guards are there also to secure the premises. And we have 24-hour surveillance as well.
Is there any issue, Emma?
Sorry, Chairperson, I just wanted to mention the flags, indicating the flags. And I think it's a very valid point that people always ask, what about the flags and the history of the flags? And I think I had a question from a group of Robin Islanders who came to visit us, and I'm actually going to visit them. We've got a lovely relationship going now between the two. They visited us for a workshop on their own. It's nothing to do with us, but they did their own workshop at the castle just to break away. And what was interesting is the question was asked, what about the flags, and especially the old South African apartheid flag that they refer to. And my answer to them was, you know, you're not here because of your grandmother and your grandfather, yes, because you're here because of your mother and your father. And the gap between the grandmother and you is your mother and father, and you can't eradicate that. And I think it's a reminder of a past that should not be repeated. People might have differences on that, but that is part of our history. It's part of our military and our social history as well. And it's a reminder of what the path is that South Africa actually walked until today. And we cannot just eradicate that. It happened. And I think that's the message we bring across to the kids as well, or to visitors at the castle as well, when they ask the question, why the flag?
Wat ek wil weet in my mat, ek verstaan van die vlag van ou Suid-Afrika. Daar is een verskil by my tussen die vlag en die eigen bou. Maar as jy daar so sien, dit het my betekent ek sien die vlag van Brittanië. En ek is nie seker nie. En betekent maar dat ik van Frankrijk op iets anders wat ik daar zo zie. Maar die van Zuid-Afrika over Zuid-Afrika krijg ik niet horen van hem. Als ik denk, dat is niet verschil. Dat is de gebouw en de vraag. Wat ik wil hiervan oor zien, wat bedoelt dit om dat daar zo op te
It portrays the history of South Africa from the Dutch presence here in 1652 with the Prinsenvlag, the Oranje, Blanje, Blauw, which you see. Then it's the Blackjack, which they call before the unifications of I think Scotland, if I'm mistaken. And then the Batavian flag, which is the one that you see as the French flag, and then the Union Jack, followed by the old South African flag, and our current national flag. I hope that answers the question.
You know, I wanted us to move forward now. Yeah, you can raise a small question, sir.
Actually, it's a follow-up on what you earlier mentioned or alluded to. The liberation component in the castle, how is it? Because now if you talk about blackjack, etc., but now we have the liberation component. Not necessarily Apple and MK, PCN, etc. I'm talking about those Khoisan people, you know, the first Dorians, up to the recent history of 1960, the rise of liberation armies.
how is it adequately represented in that? Now, he may not answer it, but it can be just food for thought that we should address it as well, because if we talk about military, it's not only the military from one side, there was the military from another.
I think that taking the direction of the question from the honourable member, what I can say, I think it will be advisable that the members to visit the museum, but because most of what he's referring to, that's what exactly that their main purpose is, to develop exactly that history. They have already accomplished, which is Advocate Dave Mitchell. It's one of his responsibilities and his passion. And the only thing is the active participation from all the groups which participated, especially with the historians. But when you visit the museum, you'll see that history. I think they've attempted to a certain level, not yet the one which will be satisfactory, but I think they've done a considerable work in trying to reflect the objective history of the country. That is the other side, the military museum. That's where most of what you are referring to, a member, has been collected.
No, I just want to caution you next time that you just stick to answering the question of the member. You don't say the member must come to the castle. Don't invite him. It's our responsibility. Yours is to answer questions here in this institution, so that you don't seem as if you're undermining the member. Because if you talk in that language, it seems as if you don't care about the member. Just stick to answering them most of the time, please. Yes. Okay. Honorable member, since there's no questions, we need to go to the next questions now, to the next presentation of AMSCO. Thank you very much, General, and your team. We're observing that work very much. As the members, as you can see, have got interest, our history has to get into that castle. Honorable member.
Can I just say, Chairperson, on the last note, I must congratulate the castle because it looks quite neat. When
yeah.
I visited, it was quite an improvement. I want to congratulate them on that.
Yeah, that's why we stopped it. It nearly went to tourism. We knew that it was going to have some coffee cups there. But in terms of military, we knew there's going to be discipline. And I think they must shoot also their parking. Those that just want to park. Members, there's also tea and coffee, but I'm not going to allow you to go and have tea and coffee. We're going to move on. Anyone who wants to have coffee would have to get it from here. Take your cup of coffee and come back. But I've released the members from the Castle of Good Hope. You can feel relieved to go. Thank you very much for the good work that you're doing. Okay. I've not. Honorable Koko, the meeting is still on. Chairperson of AMSCO, can we prevail upon you? Are you going outside? No, I'm not saying that. I said those that need coffee will go and pick their coffee and come back. No, you can go and, no, you can go and pick it up and come back. We are going to start. Mainly, I'm trying to get order there. Tatu Kekana, Tatu Mlangeni, you can come nearer here. There seems to be space now. Or all AMSCO people can come up here. you don't start your questions now. Okay. No, don't do intelligence gathering. I'm trying to get the castle to take that. Castle, can you please take your jacket and leave now? I'm disrupting my meeting. Dr. Mlangeni, you can come here. Even organized, I've got some biscuits outside, which is historical of this committee. I'm going to go to the parliament. What did you tell the journalist? It's you. What's your right to complain? Can't look surprised. Okay. Did you be when the children was when the cruel is? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay.
You have received from Mr. Rurup Meya, Mr. Swisom Sibi, Mr. Winston Musiako, and Mr. Verushka September. Chair, at the beginning of every financial year, this institution, Parliament, appropriates public funds for use by various departments according to certain votes that they table in Parliament. AMSCO then receives grants from the Department of Defense, and the grants that we receive are based on the strategic or corporate plan that we formulate. We say to the minister, these are the objectives we're going to pursue, and we want to achieve them using the resources you are giving us. And of course, as the honorable members know better than I do, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa and the Public Finance Management Act require that state entities come and account before Parliament. We're here, therefore, Chair, to account on how we have applied the resources given to us to pursue the objectives that we said we were going to pursue, but also to respond to the number of questions that the Portfolio Committee has raised with us, and deal with issues of corporate governance, and to look, maybe deal with some challenges going forward. The acting CEO, Mr. Mkhwanazi, will be leading us in presenting the report. If there are technical issues of a financial nature or management nature, we also have the chief financial officer with us here, who is also director of the organization, who will assist. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Connor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's give over to you, Acting CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll start with the presentation of the scope of what I'll be presenting this afternoon. Firstly, I'll deal with the introduction to the presentation. Then secondly, deal with the strategic focus, just to set the scene in terms of what inform our corporate goals. And then thirdly, then I come to our corporate goals in terms of performing against those corporate goals. And then I'll look at also the how we have performed in as far as finance is concerned. And then fourthly, Chair, I'll deal with the matters that have been raised by the Portfolio Committee, all 10 of them. As introduction, Chair, I would like to start by stating that in terms of the governance, we achieved a clean audit. From the Auditor General, there was no qualification or any matters of emphasis. Performance on corporate goals, Chair, most of the corporate goals were achieved or exceeded. In terms of our finance, this financial year, Chair, we realized a deficit of 15.8 million rands. Concerning the projects, all of the strategic defense packages projects performed well. At the moment, we are now focusing on the final deliveries on some of them. And also on some of them where the focus is on the operational test and evaluation as part of commissioning the system to the SMDF. On the Airbus A400M project, Chair, it was reported that it was terminated. And on other special defense account projects, they also performed well there on most of them. In terms of the strategic focus, I'll start with the first one, which is the funding and growth. The challenge that we are addressing is insufficient funds to execute the mandate, and how we intend to address that strategic gap. We have developed a cost model which assists in terms of mapping the requirements from the SMDF, the client, with the capability that is required, so that we're in a position to cost it and realize where there are gaps. The growth and the income generation, we're looking at turning around some of the facilities with the intention of realizing excess capacity so as to exploit those opportunities. In terms of the developing of that model that I've alluded earlier on, the cost model, we're at a stage now where we've developed the interim cost model. We are now using it as a predictor of the required capacity as well as the funding. We intend to complete the whole development of that cost model by 2011. In terms of the dockyard, the intention is to operationalize the dockyard such that we're in a position to exploit commercial opportunities. We have developed a strategy, and we're busy now with the business plan that is being developed at this point in time, Chair. In terms of the other actions that we are busy working on in terms of dealing with this issue, we have also engaged our Chief of the Navy at the dockyard to deal with the issue of funding, as well as engaged also the SECDEF. And at the moment, we are busy working jointly with the DOD, with our counterparts in DOD in terms of dealing with the funding issue, such that it's also included in the treasury funding requirements broadly of the DOD. The second strategic initiative, which is the people and the capability, we are addressing, Chair, the loss or the erosion of skills as a result of a number of reasons, such as the retirement, which is a normal process in an organization, the resignation, the lack of attracting the talent as an organization, In dealing with that chair, we deal with it looking at the whole process of our HR strategy. So we've developed the whole HR strategy that deals with issues such as attraction of the skills, development and training, how to deal with the issues of retaining those skills that are within the organization. Also looking at ensuring a conducive environment, hence we're looking at employee satisfaction. We're looking at also issues of human resource plan, such as the succession plan, to ensure that the skills are retained and the capabilities retained within the organization. And before people exit the organization, as part of that strategy, we're also looking at the skills transferring programs to ensure that we've got mentorship programs that are transferring the skills to the organization as we rejuvenate the organization. And all those issues that are stated below, Chair, there on the presentation, is what we are doing to deal with the strategic initiative of people's capabilities. The third one being the broad-based black economic empowerment. The challenge there we're faced with is insufficient transformation of AMSCO as an organization, as well as broadly the defense industry, to comply to the requirements of the BBBEE compliance. And how we are dealing with that strategic gap, we have developed a broad-based black economic empowerment strategy in line with the DoD policy. We are implementing BBBEE strategy to transform AMSCO such that we're in a position comply. The required compliance in terms of the BBBEE is to be at the level 4. Also, in terms of transforming the defense industry, as our suppliers, we want to ensure that the companies that are supplying us are also complying to the required level of level 4. The strategy that has been developed and has been approved already by the board. As part of also dealing with our internal strategy, we have done a verification of AMSCO BBBEE level, and we found that we are at level 6. The required level is level 4. And at the moment, we are busy working on it. We have looked at other similar organizations. We have done the analysis and also look at the results to find out what we need to do to be at the required level, level 4. As a result of that exercise, we have put up now an action plan that will be in a position with time to take us to the required level of level 4. Strategic initiative number 4 is the stakeholder relationships to address the negative perception about AMSCO due to poor stakeholder relations as well as the negative image. To deal with that, we have already appointed the stakeholder relations manager. We've identified all the stakeholders as shown below. We have in the process of reviewing our strategy to ensure that we engage and manage our relationships better with our stakeholders. The fifth one is the local industry support. To address sustainability of local capability and the lack of the local industry support, in a way to also support the government initiatives such as the economic development, job creation, the transformation, and the other initiatives. How we intend to deal with this gap, we have clarified with the industry in terms of the kind of support that is required. We're looking also at supporting the local industry where possible by developing the defense sector industry strategy and also implementing that particular strategy. We're looking at having an integrated strategy that will be dealing with the issues of BAE, dealing with the issues of DIP, which is defense industrial participation, and also dealing with the issues of export, how we support the local industry in terms of trying to get foreign markets as well. The sixth one is the operational efficiency. We have identified an operational inefficiency within our organization, such as the outdated equipment, our ITC systems, the lack of alignment, and also the lack of integration, as well as efficiency measurements. And how we deal with that, we're looking at coming up with the productivity measurement system that we've been developing, as well well as also looking at our information management as well as information technology strategy plan. We have revisited it or reviewed it. The short-term actions are being implemented at this point in time. We are also looking at benchmarking with similar organizations so that we can come up with an implementation of that particular IT strategy. In terms of the AMSCO calendar, that has been developed and implemented to ensure that there is also integration within the organization. The next point I'll be dealing with then is the corporate performance. As I indicated, that based on these strategic initiatives, you find that our corporate goals are mainly informed by the strategy as well as our service level agreement with the Department of Defense. This you would see in our report, which is around, I think it's on page 50 up to about 57 or so. What it shows, as I indicated in my introduction, is that in terms of our corporate goals, such as the capital defense material acquisition, excluding strategic defense acquisition, but also including the technology acquisition projects, the goal was 90, and we achieved 94.4. And that was in terms of the contracts placed by AMSCO, supposed to have placed the contracts. And also, if you look at the cash flow, the target was 90, we achieved 101. And similarly, on other category of our programs, which is the strategic defense acquisition, also in terms of contracts that are supposed to be placed by AMSCO, the target was 90, we achieved 94.86. And also, if you look at that category in terms of the cash flow, the target is 90 and we achieved 94.84%. As well as also the next category, which is the system support, acquisition and procurement, mainly the operation funds, which is dealing with the support and maintenance of the system. If you look at the contract that's supposed to be placed, it's 90%. On that one, we achieved less than the target. That's the one that I said, it's only two goals where we couldn't meet the target. The cash flow, if you look at the cash flow on that one, we exceeded to the target. Similarly, with the DIP, which is the Defense Industrial Participation, the target also was exceeded. If we look at the management and execution of defense technology research, test and evaluation requirements of the DOD, which is AMSCO, the Defense Institute, the target was 90, and we achieved 91. In terms of the black economic empowerment, we've categorized the spending of black economic empowerment in four categories, which is the operating budget. The target was 65, and we achieved 104, bearing in mind that is out of 135% because of the bonus points. When one is working on a BBBEE. In terms of the special defense account and the general defense account, the target was 35. We managed to achieve 50.31%, which also is we exceeded the target. AMSCO business also exceeded the target. The dockyard also exceeded the target. Dealing with human resource targets, improving the demographics in order to improve the demographics of the organization. Our target of appointments is 81% should be black. We achieved 97%. If you look at the target of 21% women who are doing technical functions, the target was 21, we achieved 30. The target of appointing non-technical women on non-technical function. On that one, it was 65 and achieved less than the target. And then women in a supervisory level and above, the target was 30. We managed to also get about 30.46. In terms of the bursaries, we're supposed to have issued out six as a goal. We achieved 7. And then we've got a program that we are appointing newly qualified technicians, scientists, as well as the engineers. The target was 12, and we achieved 17. And in terms of corporate governance, The target was not to have a qualified audit, and we achieved that one as well. The financial overview, Amstel Group received an unqualified audit, I've explained that, and the total revenue decreased with 2.8%. That would be explained earlier, as you would see in our financial statements that there's a reduction of about 2.8%. The net asset, which is the share value's interest, decreased with 2.8%. The capital investment of 26.4 million to maintain operations consisted of computer equipment, machinery, and other facilities. Employee-related cost remains the highest cost, meaning that it's because of the kind of service that we are rendering. We are a service-oriented organization, also as a result, the highest cost then is the employees. Factors influencing financial position. That's at AMSCO Corporate, the operating activities are mainly funded through the fixed transfer payment from the DOD, and also the other income is the interest on investment. What impacted the performance in this financial financial year we are reporting on is a significant decrease in interest and increase on operating expense. Due to some of the expenses, such as the municipality cost, which increased to about 25% if one has to take an example of electricity, for instance. The function performed but not covered through the transfer. This is the area where we say we're looking at the detailing our service level agreement with the client, as well as the cost model that I spoke about earlier on. Operating activities are mainly like funded through an annual transfer payment. Now we're looking at Dockyard. That also the commercial income from the utilizing of the technical capabilities. The impact in Dockyard, the transfer payment is based on activity level during the transfer in 2009. During the financial year, additional maintenance rendered not included in the original transfer base. And also the commercial income not realized as planned in the Dockyard. Now moving over to the matters that has been raised by the portfolio committee. I'll start with the project new generation operational supply support product system, which is this is a program entailing the acquisition of the new generation operational support vehicles to replace the present aging thermal range of logistic vehicles. The program approach is to acquire the vehicles and the superstructure compared to just acquiring the base. It's going to be the base and the superstructure. And the program is in process. In terms of the CEO's appointment process, after advertising, we received 133 applications, and after several screening processes, a final list of about five candidates has been formulated. Evaluation of these applications is underway before final decision on the preferred candidates. A consultation with the minister will take place before appointing that particular candidate. Coming to the Airbus, as the members will remember that on the 28th of April 2008, we acquired eight A400 aircraft and associate products from the Airbus military. And due to delays in the program, and other number of other things, a decision was taken to terminate the contract on the 5th of 2009. And AMSCO is in the process of recovering the money paid to Airbus. So that process is also still on. Just to deal with the heavy airlift capability as a result of terminating that program, members will remember that the existence of the requirement was confirmed before cancellation of that program. The alternatives were considered for short-term provision of the capability, such as renting services of the airlines, certain of some of the airlines, to fill in the gap of that required capabilities as a short-term solution. And long-term strategy was agreed to. It was agreed that the South African Air Force will review the requirement, and as soon as the requirement has been reviewed, the approved requirement will follow the normal process of acquisition. That was the long-term strategy. The results of the cultural and employee satisfaction audit, the human resource consultants conducted an AMSCO cultural audit and employee satisfaction survey that was done by an independent company. A feedback presentation and submission to the management board has been done. Also, we have given the feedback to the board of directors, and the feedback was also given to all the employees at different departments as well as different level of management. At the moment, the action plan has been drafted to address the issues that we identified by this cultural audit as well as the employee satisfaction survey. Just to take the members through the kind of the tool that was used to do this cultural survey as well as employee satisfaction survey. The model that was used is based on one to seven levels, and it was indicated to us that in most cases organizations are lying at level four, and the intention is to go higher to the higher levels. So this model was used so that we identify where we are as AMSCO, so that also we'll identify where we'd like to be and take actions in terms of closing that gap of where we are and where we'd like to be. What came out of that cultural survey was the one that is on the right-hand side, which is the desired culture by the employees. We have mapped that with our current values, and it's very close to our current values, which is an indication that what is desired as a culture by our employees is very close to the current values of the organization. In terms of the employee satisfaction survey, a scale of 5 was used. You'd see that in those that are in the green color, such as the diversity management, are the ones that we achieved well on it, on them. Vision, mission, and values, the organizational excellence, policy and practice, procedures and the infrastructure, performance management, and all of those were regarded as acceptable. But those that are below that line of a 3.2 scale, those are regarded as areas of that needs attention. For instance, the internal business unit relations, personal development training, the issue of communication, employment equity, participative management, meaning the style of management, staff morale, reward and recognition benefits, career advancement, succession plan, and you would see also that right at the lowest is the leadership, which has to do with the number of these other things as well. In terms of the action plan that was on the table that has been proposed right now, we intend to improve communications internally. Team effectiveness, we want to use the 360-degree feedback in terms of the assessment. We'll be relaunching our AMSCO values, as I indicated, that the mapping is very close to our values. 360-degree assessment is when one is assessed by the manager, assessed by the people who report to the person, as well as assessed by the client and the colleagues as well. Hence, it's referred to as a 360-degree feedback. In terms of rolling out the rollout of AMSCO Leadership Development Program, that is in place to ensure that we fill and we resolve that issue of the leadership, implement the mentorship program. We'll also intend to finalize AMSCO's management structure and fill the vacancies that we have at this point in time. and then move over to the litigation matters. The first one, which is a breach of contract pertaining to the value-add tax, an audit company instituted the legal litigation against AMSCO for alleged breach of contract pertaining to the claiming of input VAT. That was now on a special defense account instead of claiming the VAT on the operational funding. And then AMSCO has approached the SARS, and SARS has ruled that AMSCO cannot claim the VAT on a strategic defense account. And AMSCO has sent a letter to that particular company. And we are still awaiting a response from the company in terms of the ruling of the SARS. A civil court in Lisbon, an individual is instituting an action against AMSCO in Lisbon for recovering of a commission in respect of a transaction that took place in the late 1980s, and that matter and litigation is pending. The imposition of the penalty, AMSCO imposed a penalty, which is a normal process whenever the client doesn't deliver on time for late delivery. The matter was settled out of court, resulting in AMSCO withholding the 150,000 rands penalties. On other matters, there's a labor matter of the constructive dismissal by the ex-employee of AMSCO. And the matter has been now referred, AMSCO intends to review the matter at the CCMA. The other one is an update on Mr. Thomas' matter, the one that on the 5th of August 2010, both parties met at the CCMA. Mr. Thomas had demanded a settlement package of about 11 years, which AMSCO had regarded as excessive. However, at the CCMA, we settled the pay of 15 months based on the actual package of Mr. Thomas. The other one is the hazmat fire incident that took place in one of our facilities. It took place on the 23rd of June this year. The premises that is occupied by hazmat as well as the Protechnic were on fire on that particular day. However, we were fortunate that the area that was affected, only hazmat, not the rest of the area that those premises, such as the Agrotech as well as the Protechnic. So mainly the part that was affected by fire was the hazmat. Hazmat is the area where the manufacturing of masks that we supply to SNDF for the protection of chemical, biological threats. And the Protechnic is the lab that is doing the analysis for chemical and biological analysis. The South African Police Services forensic investigation has been conducted, and so far the indication is that no foul play is suspected. However, we haven't received the final report, forensic report from the SAPS. An in-house test done to ensure no damage of health contaminants, and none was found. The environmental risk assessment was done as well. It was done by an independent consultant, and the findings show that no significant impact on environment has taken place. Information is being gathered to ensure that we get the optimal benefit of the insurance from the insurance company. Buildings and facilities have been repaired and put into a good order to ensure that service delivered and damage recovered is effected. The hazmat carbon plant has been relocated to Girotech. The Protechnic chemical bulk store, which was also affected by fire, has also been relocated to Girotech. All services have been temporarily re-established to the site. No health-related problems have been reported by any staff member, and Protechnic as well as the HAZMAT are able to fulfill their mandate to the DOD. The challenge at this point in time is to reestablish the capability fully. In terms of the restructuring of the dairy, as members will remember that various management and working groups forums were established between which was AMSCO, CSIR, as well as NL, in order to do an investigation on the consolidation of the dairy into one dairy. The information which was gathered and the interaction established between the organization and the stakeholder state departments, which was the Department of Defense, DPE, Department of Science and Technology, confirmed that the establishment of the dairy would result in additional costs. The broad-based economic empowerment challenges, we've categorized them into two, external as well as the internal. External, the challenge is the foreign companies versus the local company spend, the amount that is spent by to the foreign companies as well as to the local company, to the local companies in South Africa. You'd realize that because of the strategic defense packages, the split was more on this money spent on the foreign companies as compared to local companies. The high entry barrier for small black economic empowerment companies, such as the industry, the high-tech industry, so it's capital-intensive, so those barriers are a challenge. The lack of defense industry sector charter, we don't have a charter in the defense sector, unlike other industries where, you, like, for instance, finance and others, you find that they've got an industry sector charter. The globalization of the industry, the foreign shareholding of the local companies is increasing. Foreign companies are buying local companies. Verification of the company status in terms of the time it takes to verify the company, also the costs that are involved is a challenge. Internal challenges, adequate resources in terms of the capacity, which is an internal issue that we need to look at, as well as our systems, so that we are in a position to deal with the management of the BBBE. Also, as you would see in our report, we still have a challenge in terms of transforming the organization. So that also is a challenge. And also the resources, like I indicated earlier on, that HR, the system. Also, the last one will be then the limited funding. In terms of the feedback on the status of the strategic defense package programs, I'll start with the GRIPM. The program entails the acquisition of 26 GRIPMs from Saab. All 9 dual-seat aircraft and 6 single-seat aircraft have been delivered to the South African Air Force, bringing the total to 15. Meaning that it's 11 that is outstanding. So 11 Gripen aircraft were deployed by the South African Air Force to support the FIFA Cup 2010 during that period. The completion of the delivery of the remaining 11 single-seat aircraft is expected to be in 2012. On Augusta 109, a light utility helicopter. The program entails acquisition of 30 light utility helicopters from the Augusta, that is in Italy. All 30 helicopters have been delivered to the South African Air Force. The retrofit of all delivered helicopters up to the final production baseline, excluding the communication upgrade, has been completed. A handover of the system to the South African Air Force is in process and will be completed upon completion of the operational test and evaluation that commenced in August 2010. The main focus of the project is currently the implementation of the system into the South African Air Force and to introduce improvements to them to enhance the efficiency of the helicopter system within the user environment. Coming to the Hawk, the program entails about 24 aircraft support from UK. Yes, it's missed. All aircraft have been delivered to the South African Air Force and are in operation use. The Hawk aircraft participated also in support of the South African World Cup event by providing support from the Makado Air Force Base. And deploying aircraft to TFDC as well as the AFB Waterkloof. The aircraft fleet is presently demonstrating a very high level of availability. In terms of the frigates, the program entails acquisition of 4 frigates from the German frigate consortium. All 4 frigates have been delivered to the SA Navy and news. The operational test and evaluation trials of the frigates are approaching their final stages and are envisaged to be completed late in 2010. Some technical issues associated with the 35mm dual purpose gun of the frigates are delaying the ships from being declared fully operational. So there's some slight delays due to the gun. The international trials with the ship-borne Lynx helicopters progressing well and should be completed also by the end of 2010. In terms of our submarines, the program entails acquiring 3 submarines also from the German submarine consortium. All 3 submarines have been delivered. Like I indicated earlier on, that now the main focus is now ensuring that we complete that operational test and evaluation of the systems such that we realize the steady state of maintaining and supporting those systems. The other program is the program of maritime helicopters. The program entails 4 maritime helicopters that we bought from Augusta Western. The retrofit of all delivered helicopters, bringing all of the final production baseline, has been completed. The main focus of the project currently is on implementation of the system into the South African Air Force to introduce improvements to enhance the efficiency of the helicopter system within the user environment. Thank you, Chair.
There's one that you have not yet mentioned. Can you mention it?
Sorry?
The one that you have not spoken about.
The Hunter?
Well, I said there's one that you are not mentioning. Why are you not mentioning it?
Which one is that?
I'm just looking up my information. Roypak? What's your story with the Roypak? Or are you hiding it? Okay, so why is it not in your report?
I think the reason that you don't see Roypak in that presentation is because it falls out of the strategic packages as requested by the portfolio committee. But however, one can just respond to say that the members would remember that in terms of that program, it has experienced delays. It's 12 fighter helicopters that we're acquiring from Daniel. And out of the 12, 4 are at the required baseline of a deployable baseline. The other 8 are still outstanding. The matter at the moment, as it's shown in the report, is that we are dealing with it with the highest level of management between Daniel, the user environment, which is South African Air Force, as well as AMSCO, to deal with the outstanding functionality that needs to be fulfilled so that all 8 of them are at the required baseline, which is a deployable baseline, all 12 of them.
Members of Parliament, that is the presentation of the report, annual report of AMSCO. I'm sure you don't want to stress yourself, but towards 5:30, you should conclude. I've got on my list Mr. Maynir. I've got on my list Mr. Masango. Can I start with you, Maynir?
Thank you, Chair. I have several questions, but I'd like to begin with two categories, and that is the termination of Sipho Tomo's appointment and the Airbus A400M. Now, in the presentation and in the annual report, Sipho Tomo's termination is referred to, and in that report, in the annual report, Arms Corps says that, Arms Corps said that you do not foresee that there will be a successful
honorable
career
minister,
in Arms Corps, but that happened.
Honorable question? Minister, I want you to talk into the mic.
Okay.
I need to be able to take you. My parts are not working.
I'll speak clearly for the transcript, Chair. The question is, in respect of the settlement at the CCMA, which was, seems to be the equivalent of 15 months of the package, what exactly was the cost of that settlement, and what is a breakdown of the cost of the total settlement? That's the first question. The second question is, on what grounds did the CCMA, or on what grounds was the award against Arms Corps made? Then in respect of the Airbus A400, in the annual report on page 48, you refer to a number of outstanding issues. So the first question is, what are the outstanding issues? I gather from the presentation that the transfer payment has not been made from Airbus Military back to South Africa. What is causing a delay in that process? And finally, what are the short-term provision alternatives that have been implemented as an interim solution?
Before you answer, I just wanted to check you were quoting on page 41 on Arms Corps, on the Airbus.
Chair, in respect of Sipho Tomo settlement.
And I just wanted to tell you the Airbus issue.
I was quoting from page 16, I believe.
Page 16?
Yes.
Okay.
Which reads, a number of outstanding issues between Arms Corps and AMSL emanating
from
the termination of the contract are being addressed.
Yeah. You see, what I also wanted to propose to members that I would also have an understanding that this is an outstanding issue which has got some legal challenges in itself. So I would want whatever the department is saying that it doesn't overrun into where other partners international pick up what is the view from South Africa, and then it creates more problems than what it has done. I would see how far it goes, but we should not do what we did last time, where we became harsh and Sipho agreed with us on the fact that it didn't tell all the other stakeholders what was going on into that discussion. So I have to guide it. Not, as I'm saying, I won't be limiting members not to answer the ask the question, but I wouldn't allow also the department to transgress what is called legal challenges that might cost all of us and continuously embarrassing the country in the way we're handling this particular matter. So I do caution the department that in your own behavior, we are very aggressive as members of parliament when it comes to questioning. But when you have a legal challenge, don't go into it because you're going to create a problem for yourself and those that are negotiating with. So be very cautious. I'm very aware about the challenges that are happening within the Airbus, and I would want you to be very limited in how you're handling that particular matter. But I don't say don't answer where you can. Babu Masango.
Thank you, Chair. So I just want to start with the challenges facing the department, I mean the Arms Corps, especially when it comes to recruiting skilled people or getting. I don't understand, they want to, they got a challenge there, but when it comes to bursaries, they just choose to give 6 members bursary. And they think they have done very good, they have exceeded the target when they have 7. I mean, they need people a lot of skills, but they go for 6 and they exceed 6. And they want to clap for themselves in hands and say, well done, we have done very good. Can they maybe explain why they are not doing more to do this? But Chairperson, when it comes to this strategic plan, I can see they have done so very good, but I'm a little bit worried. And my worry is, you know, they measure percentage everywhere, and even one of their targets is a percentage. Like the women, you say 21%, and You see, we don't know how many, we want to know the number. You cannot say 21% women out of what? I don't know how many women are there, and you're just saying 21% of women, and then you say, I've reached 100%. Well, what is the number? Tell us the number of the women, so that we can know what is the number, and you can tell us about the percentage. Because this is a little bit confusing. And the other thing, Chairperson, that I just look on the what you call strategic initiative. I thought those are the strategies that they should work towards, and those are the things that they should be measuring themselves on. Because those are the issues that actually this department should strive to achieve. But they have tried to shift those apart and work on strategic things that they can achieve, and they put them. I want to see those things being their strategic plan, because those are the challenges of the department, and they should be their strategic plan rather than just something that they are putting aside, and they look at things that they maybe they can achieve. Maybe the chairperson is a politician. He told them, no, put it aside, otherwise you won't make it. Thank you.
No, Chair, I don't understand the last question.
No.
Maybe we could the strategic plan and so on, Chair.
Honorable Chairperson, you're in the Board of Arms, you answer as much as you can. Yeah, this is Parliament. I'm the one who's managing. Who speaks? Please, can you hold your horses now? I'll give you an opportunity when it arrives. Of now, I don't recognize what you are saying. You're just extending your friendship. Yeah. Honorable Mazia. Honorable Mazia.
No, Chairperson, taking from what Mr. Masangwe has just presented, I would also want to seek clarity in terms of measurement of performance. Because in terms of demographic profile improvement, you have 97% achieved out of 81% black. And you also have 21% women in technical function groups, which was what you earmarked, and you achieved 30.43. But when you look at your staffing, your staffing is opposite to the report, because in your report your top management, you have got 3 male blacks, 1 female, 1 white male, and then on the third layer of management, you have got 60 black male, 15 black female, 16 colored, 16 colored male, 1 colored female, 16 Indian male, 4 Indian females, and you have got 258 white male and 34 female white female. And as you go down, there is no change at all, except to the second of last category, where your numbers have increased and you have got 78 females. I don't know if the 90% that you are referring to, the 97% you are referring to, is it the one on your fifth level category, where you have got 78 female and you have got black female and you have got 38 white female, which begins to balance. And then you have got 192 colored male and 53 black male. Yeah. So I just want clarity there in terms of your profiling, because if I look at this staff profiling and compare it with your objectives, I don't see any any comparisons in terms of your percentages on the other side, except if you can explain how do you degrade your percentages. Thank you.
Honorable Stella, I've taken note there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to congratulate AMSCO, the board, together with its employees, for making it a point that they heed to the call that the President made that we need to invest in education. I'm looking at your CSI that you identified the schools and then made some commitment there. I would like to congratulate you on that. Then secondly, on what Honorable Mazia has just spoken about, my only focus is that you're not specific whether on these black females and males that you have appointed in your institution. We did not specify whether these ones are young or what. I would like to get a specific thing. Would these are so many young people that benefited from AMSCO, as also the President have highlighted the importance of making it a point that we do accommodate young people. Then the last one, Chair, I would like to know, at what stage do you undergo security clearance for your applicants? For example, you've just told us that you've advertised the CEO's position. Now it's in the process of being shortlisted, whereby you take 5 candidates for interviews. Then I want to understand so that we avoid all these hiccups that we usually meet with at the highest level. Thank you, then.
Chair, the other issues have been raised about AMSCO, but what is very important to me is that we have in the country issues that have been raised as a mandate during elections, issues that are raised as key issues in the country. And we'd like to see where we're spending money, a lot of money for that matter. The army has a heavy budget, just like many other countries. Does that money, when we achieve the objective of the army, we also linking them up, building them up with the national interests of this country? And I don't think we should be apologetic about it. In other words, if we buy in anywhere, those people, like they do for themselves, must know that we also have our own national interests and we need to protect those national interests. And I would say even for both of us, ruling party opposition, our national interests should be a priority. So they have touched on this issue, but I would just like them to expand more that when they are buying and spending money, do they consider all these issues that a lot of our money must not escape us, a lot of our resources must not escape us? Because if they do, ultimately it will be a poor country will always cry poverty, unemployment, because we're losing a lot of resources. We don't capture them here and make sure that we do things here and people are employed as a result and so on and so forth. So I'm just saying that total strategy, national interest, when they're doing army things, do they make sure that they link up with national interest? And I perceive that we shouldn't feel sorry for other countries because they don't feel sorry for us. Their national interests are number one.
On the matter of litigation, I want you to talk more about this Lisbon case. It's an important case for us politically, because you seem to be carrying the baggage of apartheid into AMSCO, and you are not telling us why do you feel so justified that you must go into this particular case. What are the motives? I've not been able to do. You are giving us a crisp question that there's a case and that case falls under litigation. A case that happened in 1980, and we as a country must carry the burden for that case. Why? of one particular individual? And how far in terms of process are we? I see that you say that you'll deal with it on the 30th of November. And, I mean, what? Maybe the board chairperson can also talk to that particular case. That's why I should also carry this particular burden. It's an important case. I mean, it might be important that we rally each other here. I mean, we're a country, and our resources are going to be exhausted into a case. I don't know what to achieve. In the continuous question that everybody is asking about, you know, you've always had this retention on skills development on page 33. I just want to hear how far you've gone on trying to retain, additionally to what Honorable Stella is asking. Because it seems as if you have a lot of aging people in AMSCO. What are you doing? Are you paying these young people, or you don't pay them? My one last question is your relationship with Dinel. What is your relationship with Dinel? It seems as if you're not building each other. Are you enjoying to fight with each other? What are you doing in terms of your relationship, in terms of finding a way of working together? I just must say, we do have to allow, the report of AMSCO is very thick. So I'm going to allow another round of questions after these questions have been presented. So nobody must get frustrated about another one. It's a very thick report. It's a very interesting report. It's got a lot of challenges, and members of Parliament must speak to that particular report. Can you answer, and then you'll share the questions amongst yourselves. Which side are you today? Where are you today?
Where am I today?
Yes.
I'm here.
Oh, I thought that you were doing AMSCO. I was officious.
The word is Valoni.
Chair,
we were asked about the Tomo Mecca, that in our report we said we did not foresee any difficulties that would occasion further costs to AMSCO. It is true, at that time, when we drew up that report, we did not foresee it. But subsequent to that, we have had two CCMA hearings. First one was the conciliation one, which really did not produce any result. The second one was arbitration. Now, arbitration would have meant that the case starts de novo. So it's a case that starts right from the beginning, and it could drag on. We anticipated that, depending on how that, whether it went the way of AMSCO or the Tomo way, the next stage would have been the labor court. So it meant, therefore, that there was going to be a very lengthy process. And that lengthy process, what would it have done? It would have meant that a state of paralysis is created in the organization through, say, interdicts or any kind of restraining orders. The AMSCO could have been prevented from appointing the CEO to that position, which could have meant that the situation of leadership uncertainty could be perpetuated indefinitely in the organization. We had already suffered a lot, and we had to bear that in mind. The second issue, of course, that we had to consider seriously was the costs to the organization financially. If we were to go through all those stages. And I must hasten to say, Chairperson, that there was no CCMA award. It was the decision of the board, advised by the legal team, in exercising its care and due diligence, that it felt that instead of us staying there, using senior counsel, spending more and more money, and with us not being the ones who decided the outcome of the case. The outcome of the case could have been one that says you shouldn't have fired the man, let him be reinstated. Reinstatement would have meant that we then have to settle on his terms, because then he would be strengthened by the court order. So we had to consider all those things. And as I said, we had to make sure that we have to run the organization. We had to solve the issues of the organization. The publicity on the organization, negatively in the country, was not good for us. In any event, at the beginning of this process, I did say on behalf of the board that we would have wanted an amicable settlement. That amicable settlement from all precedents of labor court cases and decided CCMA cases was 12 months. What the board then has done is 12 months plus the notice of 3 months that the man would have served. So that's really what we have done. But on the details of what monies, what is the breakdown, I'm going to ask Mr. Gerard Grobler, the chief financial officer, to deal with that. And I'm sure the CEO, acting CEO, if there's anything you want to add, he can add.
Secretary, if I can just the cost, total cost that we paid was basically 2.7 million. The exact figure was 2703610. That was basically based on the annual package, including company contributions to pension fund, medical fund, as well as the funeral policy. So those were the company costs.
How many million?
2.7 million.
2.7 million.
2.7
million.
His annual package was 2.162888. That was his annual package. So the amount was paid after tax. The actual amount paid, the exact amount paid to Mr. Thorne was 1.6221166. 1.6 million was the actual amount of paid off the tax.
Becoming official. Yeah. So I think I must work in becoming official.
I think I must maybe just also add that we therefore agreed not to pay him the amount that was entitled to him for the restraint of trade.
You can just talk into the mic, sir.
The amount of restraint of trade that was still outstanding was therefore not paid to Mr. Thorne. That was the amount of 760,000. So that money we then saved in this case.
Go on, Mr. Kwanas.
All right, I think the next question coming from the Honorable Mr. Minier was the issue of the A400M in terms of, I'll start with the interim solution. I indicated on one of my slides that when the decision to terminate this program was decided, it was agreed that the requirement will exist, and also it was agreed that we're going to look at it in two ways. The short term, I said they'll be looking at hiring the service of the airline to fill the gap during the time when I was still acquiring that capability. And I said the long term is to have the South African Air Force reviewing the requirements. And as soon as the requirement is approved, it will be following the normal process of acquisition. And then dealing with the issue of a number of issues that are outstanding on the issue of the Airbus, as I indicated in my slide, is that in terms of the contract, when we terminate, we're supposed to get all our money back from the Airbus. And now we are in a process of negotiating to get all the money that was paid to Airbus. And as it has been indicated that in a terminating such a contract, the reason why we say in the report there are a number of things that need to take place, it's because you are looking at the whole process of the termination of the contract, which includes a number of other things such as exchanging the documents and such. So it's the whole process of dealing with those issues that needs to be closed as part of the termination clause of the contract.
So in a sense, Chair, what we're saying is that we have to make sure that we follow every step relating to the termination, because if we don't do so, there would be a possibility of them on a technicality instituting action and winning it against us, legal action and winning against us. Of course, we expect that from their side they should try and hold on, resist, with the hope that they can get lobbies inside South Africa who say don't terminate it and so on. But a decision has been taken, we're going ahead to terminate it, and we are applying the provisions of the contract. We are intending, we're putting a lot of pressure on them. We are hoping that we could, by December, get our money, either all the money or part of the money. We are hoping, because it's not a one-sided process. We're dealing with another party.
Please don't do that. Don't put time crunch now.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to avoid.
Okay. That's why I'm using the word.
Parliament, in Parliament, we keep you to your word.
I said hope.
We'll interpret it in many ways. Please don't just engage us with that one. Please don't finish the negotiation.
Okay, fine.
The other question, Chair, of Honorable Masango, in terms of the recruitment of skills and the bursaries, the number of seven and the target of six and achieving seven. I think what we're trying to measure there is that the number of bursaries that we're issuing out are also subject to the budget that we're having. So there's financial constraints. Hence, we set ourselves to what is reasonably affordable, which is about six bursaries in terms of the affordability. However, we managed to get more than what we had planned to achieve in terms of the budget. I think that the biggest constraint at this point in time. We'd like to get more, but the constraint would be the limitation of the funding. And then in terms of the targets in general, where they are expressed as a percentage, I think we take note of the fact that the numbers are not there to be helpful to further explain that out of how many numbers are we talking about that? I think we take note. It's an area that we'll have to improve as we deal with our reporting, such that we indicate to the members we employed maybe 100 people, and out of 100 people, 21 were female or such, and then we express it in terms of percentage. In terms of why our targets are not in a way linked to our measurements, you will see that as I indicated earlier on, is that our goals are mainly informed by both the targets as well as the service level agreement we have with the DoD. So the first part, that one of the contracts that have been placed versus the cash flow, is what we are measuring in terms of project management as agreed with the client, which is the DoD. And the other targets, you would see that they are talking to the transformation of the organization, hence of course now the appointments that we plan that when we appoint new people to the organization in order to change exactly what was also highlighted by the Honorable Mazia as he was looking at our staffing there. Our staffing, yes, it is a challenge in terms of transforming the organization. Hence I said earlier on, if we look at where we are right now and where we would like to be as an organization in transforming the organization, there is a gap and there is a challenge. And we've got a strategy that we're putting in place to deal with that challenge. So you'd see that it's composed of the transformation. It talks to the BEE. And we've got got the target there of the BEE as a measure, and also you see that it deals with issues such as the efficiency of how efficient the organization is, and also it's dealing with the challenge that also has been raised by the Honorable Kekane, the issue of how are we dealing with the industry. So the strategy is dealing with the issue of how do we support our local industry to ensure that the required capability by the SNDF within the industry is sustained. We don't lose that capability, especially if it's a strategic capability. And also the skills that are required by the industry, we don't lose the skills. So how are we supporting our industry? So we're talking to coming up with ways of ensuring that we spend more on our local industry, such that we develop the skills, we're in a position to retain the capability. And that part that deals with the local support of industries, trying to address that issue. So as you would see that the strategy is trying to align, but over and above the strategy, there's this service level agreement with the client that we need to measure ourselves in terms of how we're performing as agreed by the client.
because even in that committee, you have representatives coming from the technical environment, young black engineers, who also share their experiences in terms of saying, these are some of the things that we need to start improving and put measures and structures to put in place. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, the evidence of the young people in the organization is Mr. Mbada. He's very young. And Ms. Chuma here, Daphne Chuma, who's our stakeholder relations manager. But I agree that in our report next time, we need to indicate factually the figures, the ages, the number of people coming in. And I think part of the process of promoting that employment equity may also be through, apart from natural attrition, that is people who go because they are old, they can't stay there, we may also accelerate the departure of those who are like my age or slightly younger than me, who may be happy to retire early because the policy might be allowing for them to do so. And then, of course, when they go, bring in younger people. We can't retrench, because if we retrench, then we would occasion lots of costs to the organization, which we don't have. But also, of course, appreciating the fact that it is a very highly skill-intensive organization. So we've got to make sure that we have people with the requisite skills before we bring about any changes. I do agree, Honorable Chair, with Honorable Mazia, that in our performance measurement next time, we have to give the actual figures and do comparisons like a company when it gives an annual financial report. It shows where it was the previous year, and it says this is where we are this year. So we should, as we show it with monies, we must also be able to show it in terms of all other elements of transformation in the company. And I think next time around, we will make sure that we do things in a manner that reflects how we are progressing, just beyond dealing with our own performance vis-a-vis the target. We must also show where we were the year before. We can't agree more with Honorable Kekana that there has to be an emphasis on promoting the domestic industry, and that is what the board of AMSCO has been saying. We've got to push that general drive, and we're engaging management in that regard. We agreed as a board that our HR committee, one of its responsibilities would be to make sure that the BBBEE is implemented and domestic industry is supported through procurement by AMSCO. So it's a big challenge that we have to address, and we are committed to that. The Honorable Chair, you asked the question, why should this country carry the burden of litigation on a case relating to events that happened in 1986 when this new government was not there? We wish we could ignore that, Chair, but we are not able to do so. As a country, when we adopted the new constitution, one of the things we agreed on that time was that the liabilities of the previous government and its institutions are the liabilities of this government, including the assets. The same would be with regard to the assets. We are not necessarily saying we're going to pay that money, Honorable Chair, but man has taken us to court in the context of
context of South Africa, we could argue that the matter has prescribed, because the South African legal system allows for prescription of such matters after 3 years if the claims have not been issued during that period. But this guy is now using the Portuguese court. There, prescription, I think, is after 20 years. It's after 20 years or so, so that 20 years has not yet passed. And 20 years from the time when he did the first litigation. So all that we are doing is really to record that we are opposing that that application. And we have to do so, because if we don't, then they will issue an order in our absence, and it could be too devastating to us, because it's a lot of money that the man is claiming. We estimate that it is in the region of 3 billion rand. So really, just to oppose it. We don't accept that burden, but we have to oppose it because it's before the court of law. I think, Mr. Mkwanazi, you might deal with the issue of relationship with Danel, and maybe if Ms. Daphne Chuma wants to say something, if she has something to say, she'll say.
Chair, in terms of retention of skills, as well as the security clearance, I'll ask that to the HR, the general manager, deal with us. We lose next two questions. However, in terms of the relationship with Danel, our relationship with Danel, I think it's good in the sense that we have a relationship of a supplier and the client in as far as managing those programs are concerned. Also, when it comes to issues where they've got challenges, we meet and discuss those challenges with Danel, being very mindful of the fact that we need them in as much as they need us to be able to fulfill our mandate. We need Danel as a supplier, because they must be in a position to supply us with the capability that is required by our client. So our relationship is that kind of relationship that says we need each other, and we need to ensure that they also survive, so that we can survive in terms of being in a position to render the service to the client. And also we are mindful of the fact that also there's a role that Danel is playing in terms of jointly a number of areas, such as research, work on technology, that we're doing jointly with Danel as well as the CSIR. So that jointness in terms of other departments in trying to deal with all those challenges that we're faced with. CSIR, for instance, we work with them closely in terms of technology development or in areas where there's a technology that needs to be developed. So we have that relationship, Chair, although that, as you would see, that maybe they're experiencing problems in terms of the delay, but we engage them, even at the highest level. In one of the programs, we had to meet at the executive level, even at the board level, to try and jointly resolve the matters at hand, such that it's got a minimal impact to both Danel as well as our client, the SNDF.
Just to add on the Danel matter, surely there are contractual obligations in as much as, you know, there is a relationship. AMSCO cannot just sit back if, you know, it is owed money. It must enforce its rights in terms of the contract. However, in terms of our contract, we have really even, you know, gone to an extent of giving necessary indulgences to the North. Yeah.
No, he doesn't want to speak. You had me too much, Chair, but let me speak just on this one.
Yes, so I want him to, for that issue, those issues that were referred to by your chapter, by the acting CEO, we need answers. You see, you can do that there in the board. Here, you answer, Chief.
I requested that the HRGM respond on Honorable Ms. Ndadeni's question of the security clearance. And then I also said that I would like him to touch on the issues of the retention of skills.
Thanks, Chair. I will start with the issue of the question on the retention of skills. I think when we look at the retention of skills strategy, we take a holistic approach that says it's got a number of interventions in terms of saying what is the onboarding when you appoint a candidate, you know, the whole induction process. How do we expose the candidate to the organization? And we also look in terms of employee development plans. We have set targets for ourselves for the next financial year that says for technical employees, we want 90%, if I'm not mistaken, conformance in terms of saying managers need to make sure that they are formally agreed employee development plans that are signed by the employee and the manager to say what are the developmental plans and what are the areas of growth for that individual. So we have actually set that target. And the other aspect or indicator or objective we set ourselves is in terms of staff turnover. What we've also experienced in the past, we will recruit these young, bright graduates, and then to be too quick to lose them within a couple of months or a year. So we've actually set a target in terms of saying we need to reduce the staff turnover. And, of course, there are a number of other available inputs or information that we received from the employee satisfaction surveys, which talks to broader plans that we're putting in place. And we continue to evaluate those programs and making sure that we are not losing touch to those identified, high, caliber talent that we've identified for ourselves. So there are a number of, initiatives that we have put in place to make sure and to safeguard. And obviously, one of the roles or the responsibility of the Employment Equity Committee is to also ensure to have those reviews on a quarterly basis to make sure that we are not digressing, but we are making progress. And the other element is also in terms of what we are requiring. When employees resign, we have taken that decision at the management board to say we want to know about it, to say what are the circumstances and the reasons why that particular employee, and part of that is an exit interview where we get valuable information. And if you can deal and address those issues, everybody is happy. And I think just broadly, those are some of the retention strategies that we've put in place. In terms of the security clearances, obviously, Chair, those clearances, they cost money. So we try and minimize to say, at least, once that shortlist has been established, in this case, I would imagine that the board would then say, yes, we'll rank the candidates. And then once we have that information, we then start, doing those clearances. In the event that number one candidate fails the assessment, then you automatically, default to the second, best candidate for the job. And I think those plans, that's exactly why we went, extensively to try and get as many candidates, so as to avoid the situation of starting all over again, in the event that, somebody does not meet the requirements of the security clearance. Thanks, sir.
The questions, sir?
I know members would have now follow-up questions. As I said, this is the last round now, but I'll give you to exercise that thinking. I'll start with Honorable Stellan Dabeni. I've got Maynir on my list. I've got Tata Tolo on my list. I've got Honorable Kekana on my list from Soweto. And Comrade Popo, Comrade Masango is no more. Honorable Masango is no more here. Stella was not referring to his side. He's just shot. It's not that he's a young fellow, he's just a short fellow. So he thinks that you are referring to him when you are talking about young people. You still have, I know you want to smuggle yourself in there. Actually,
thanks, sir. Mine, maybe he didn't capture me well. What I wanted to understand, at what stage do you undergo that security clearance? After the interviews or immediately after you have shortlisted the five candidates that you're going to take to the interview? That's my question. Thank you.
No, you're not sharing yourself.
Oh, sorry, Chair.
Can you behave now?
Okay.
Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Do I understand this to be the last round? Okay. So then I have a question of clarification and then several other questions. The question of clarification, I just want to be clear in respect of Sipho Tomo's termination. It's not correct, therefore, in the slides that the settlement was a settlement at the CCMA. It was a settlement agreed to by the board. And that settlement was in the amount of a golden handshake of 2.7 million rand. Is that correct? That's a question of clarification. On the additional questions.
So golden handshake is not clarification, it's language. Yeah, I did clarify you also about your English. Sometimes it's too harsh.
It's language, presumably, I'm free to use.
Okay, let us go ahead. Just put in your language.
Chair, then on the Airbus A400. Now, I have, as the Chief Executive Officer no doubt knows, submitted a request for documents in respect of the Airbus A400M to Arms Corps. And that request was done in February. During March, there was correspondence between myself and Arms Corps, where Arms Corps disclosed that they had 27 documents in their possession in respect of Arms Corps. And after that, I was given an expectation that I would be entitled to at least some of those documents under PIA. But since April, despite being in contact with legal services, phoning the head of legal services, and indeed phoning your office, Chief Mr. Mkhwanazi, nobody has responded to me. Now, the question is, why is that? And have indeed either the ministry or the secretariat interfered in the process and prevented Arms Corps from furnishing me with those documents, some of which I am entitled to under PIA. So that's on the Airbus. Then I'd like to come to the question of performance bonuses. If I understand the numbers correctly, provision is made in financial year.
Can I clarify myself here? You see, because I don't want to be a representative of PIA and use parliamentary processes to go through, because we don't have a preview as a chairperson of this committee. I don't have an insight of what they're interacting over now. It has become very difficult for me to use the parliamentary rules to interfere with this particular matter. Would I request you that we keep outside that matter, because I am not privy to what they are getting engaged into, and I don't want to get caught into the processes between PIE and OZA. For my own sake, as a chairperson of the committee and for Parliament, I wouldn't want to drag them into that environment without proper knowledge. If you had alerted me, I would maybe have had applied and solicited some thinking through that particular process.
Also, Chairperson, can you ask Honorable Menier not to bring personal, organizational, party matters to the portfolio committee? Because the matter he's raising, it's a personal party matter that he's bringing to the portfolio committee without the knowledge of the portfolio committee, and he wants to drag us into it.
I just want to caution. I would want you to handle that matter, not within the previous and under my jurisdiction as a chairperson of the committee himself. It's a matter that is totally out of my jurisdiction. I can't enforce five matters that I don't know about at this particular matter. So I would really want to rule just like that, with full respect to you, Mr. Honorable David Miller. That's all I wanted to request.
Chair,
yes.
Chair, I mean, if I can respond to this. The acquisition of the Airbus A400M is a very important matter, and it's a matter of public interest. And the PIA application is a parliamentary matter, and I feel that I can legitimately raise it here because, and I say that, I've written to Arms Corps, no response. I've phoned Arms Corps,
no,
can
no
I response.
Feel that
I've put parliamentary questions, no response.
David, I am not at all stalling any process. I'm just saying to you that I don't have a preview of that process that you're talking about. And I've never, as a chairperson of this committee, have I used my authority for that engagement. And I can't then be persuaded or be pushed to owe up to processes that I don't know. We respect you, but we say, well, as I'm handling now, I'm chairing a matter that is related to annual reports, not matters that are related to PI. So at no stage can I allow that. And you know for a matter of fact that I don't handle questions. Questions are being handled by the Speaker. And I can't suddenly drag that responsibility and come and take it over here in the Portfolio Committee. That would be where the mixture and confusion of responsibility. So I'm just saying that let's stick to the annual report and deal with matters that are in my preview that I'm sanctioned at this particular matter. We need to be able to deal with. How you handle other matters, I think I stand to what I'm ruling for that. Don't drag them into this particular matter. And let the acting CEO and the chair stick to the annual report and what is in front of us in the annual report. I have not seen any matter that comes up in the documentation that is in front of me to say that there is a PI matter and let's get the answer to that one. No way is it written down at all. And that would create a problem for this particular portfolio committee. And I must always protect all members of the portfolio committee, not only you alone. But I'm just saying that we are not going to get response today here on this particular matter in the manner you are approaching it at this moment. If you had an allegation, I suppose I've raised it with me long ago. I did hint to you that I was inviting AMSCO. You never hinted at all to me that you have had such a fight with AMSCO that none of us knows about it here at this particular moment.
I will obviously respect your ruling and move on to my next question. But on the question of performance bonuses, if I understand the numbers correctly, provision is made, or provision was made in the financial year, or is made in the financial year for about 31 or 32 million rand of performance bonuses. But in the same year, the institution makes a loss. Why is it that we're paying performance bonuses when institutions are making losses? I'd then like to move on to some questions of acquisition. It seems on a reading of both the previous year's annual report and this year's annual report that there are major problems in respect of the ground-based air defense system. I mean, it is also evident from the annual report that action steps have been taken and corrective measures have been implemented, but what are the problems and what is being done to solve those problems. Then just briefly in respect of three other acquisitions, which it seems to me are linked to World Cup 2010. In respect of the shallow water route survey system, which is on page 14 of the annual report, correct. Why was it necessary to acquire the system? How much did the system cost, and how will it be used in the future? In the respect of the IRIS-T missile system on page 16 of the report, now, again, why was it necessary to acquire the system? How much did the system cost? And that's an important question because it seems to me that when we acquired the Gripen, the idea was that the A-DARTA missile air-to-air missile would be used on that aircraft, and because that system was not ready, we have had to bring in or purchase an interim system. My analysis might be incorrect, but I'd like to know what the costs involved are. And then, interestingly, I see that on one of our frigates, we built something called a nuclear biological and chemical door, which was that was on page 26. Again, why was it necessary to acquire that system? How much did the system cost? I'd like to know that, please. And then, just in closing, Chair, As you know, I'm normally not very patient, but in this case I have been patient, and the Chief Executive Officer said that stakeholder management is a very important part of his strategy. Well, more than a year ago, Omnicorp promised to explain to me in writing how it give me details of engineering changes being made on the frigates. I'm still waiting.
Honorable Kekana, you are not responding to David. I've got the department here to answer.
She's just listening to the whole presentation. When you're talking employment equity, race, gender, it's covered. I'll just say, don't forget disability. I mean, I'm surprised that nobody mentioned it, you know, especially in the army, where it is actually inherent, because casualties in the past and so on. I'm sure all soldiers are not foot soldiers. You could find places for the disabled soldiers that are there. In any case, it is policy. Disabled are not a joke. You've got to employ them. Secondly, another clarity, but this one is linked to what Honorable David Minat asked about the golden handshake. I just want clarity because my understanding was that the matter was taken to CCMA, and in fact after reconciliation and arbitration, the analysis of the board was that if they settle it within the board, that's a better option. So the institution was going to give, I mean, the cause they were going to be worse. And as a result, they opted for, I mean, it's a matter of weighing your losses and gains. And the thing they thought their better option is the board. I just want that clarity because that is how I understood it. And in fact, you can't divorce CCMA from their decision because David said it wasn't actually settled there. He's divorcing CCMA from their decision that it was actually the integral part, in fact, the determining factor for what decision they took.
Is there any member of parliament who has another question? Dr. Tolo?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. You know, the question asked for an incumbent, Stella, about Brazil. You know, I just found out as a rural man to say this, Brazil is also the encourage, rural people also be involved, because I know all sometimes rural people were just think about them on the election, but on delivery sometimes. I'm a rural man, remaining there, I'm going to die there in rural area. I just find out about this thing of bursary in rural area. And on the same page, talent development program, health trainees, also I just find out the same thing. On this 12, the rural people also there. Yeah, I'm not talking about the poor, but the rural people all over South Africa. Just find out also the involve those people also there, or just in urban area. Hello, thank you very much.
Is there any member who's got a question? You finished with your question, David? So I'll give the department to respond for the last time, and then we'll see what comes out. You go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair. on the first one, at what stage, I'll ask the HR to respond again to that one, to further clarify it. And on the... Okay, that one has been brought up, Chair, and I'm not dealing with that one. This is on the picture I'm supporting. In terms of the performance bonus, I'll ask the CFO to deal with that one, at Mbara, HR. And in terms of the major problems with the ground-based air defense system, what are the problems? In terms of that program, with it also it's a program that is supposed to be delivered by Daniel. They experience problems of delay in terms of fulfilling the full functionality of that system. Areas of serious concern was the issue of the communication system, that when they started integrating the whole system, they experienced the problem. So that caused the delay. In the report, it stated that we have engaged with Daniel at the highest level of management to try and resolve this matter. Also, we have engaged our client, which is the user environment, to find out the way forward in terms of how do we deal with these delays, such that we are in a position to see if we cannot be in a situation to deal with some of those outstanding functionality as we deal with phase two, because this is phase one. As soon as phase one is completed, we'll be going to phase two of the ground-based defense air systems. In terms of the surveillance system that was acquired, the question was why was it acquired and what value is it going to add to the Navy? That system is for surveillance of the maritime environment. At that point in time, it had to be acquired because urgently, due to the fact that there was a need to ensure that our borders are extra guarded against any threat during the period of the 2010 World Cup. However, it's a system that is going to be used also to do the surveillance that is required by the Navy. The fact that it was just pushed forward urgently, it was because in terms of the need that was identified, but it's a system that is required by the Navy in terms of the surveillance of the shallow waters as they do their work. However, the Honorable Member would understand that because we're not ready for such questions, we cannot provide figures in terms of the cost. I don't have the figures with me. In terms of the IRIS that was raised, as you would understand that IRIS is missile, again, was a requirement in terms of air-to-air defense for the Gripen. And the plan is to integrate the A-Data program. However, if you align the program of the A-Data, not to say that because it was delayed, with the program of the A-Data, you experience a problem in terms of a gap of how do you fill that gap during the time when it's mostly required that capability of
just speak louder so that all of us can understand your A's and B's.
Okay.
I understand David. I understand much about Navy issues.
Okay.
Then I don't, but if you speak to all of us, we'll be able to follow that matter.
Okay. I was saying, Chair, that in terms of the required capability of air-to-air defense system, yes, it's true that was going to be filled by the missile, which is the A-Data missile. However, in terms of the program of the A-Data, as planned, not due to the delays, didn't match the agent requirement of that air-to-air defense system. So you have a gap where you don't have that capability as it is required. And to fill the gap, the decision was taken that we would fill it with the minimum requirement of this IRIS-T, such that we are in a position to fill that agent gap that is required, especially during the time of the 2010 again, in terms of the threats that you'd realize when you're hosting an event of that nature. So thereafter, the program is on course, it's running well, there are no delays with A-Data. Also, in terms of integrating the A-Data to the Gripen, that is on course in terms of integrating it. It's going to be integrated. Again, I don't have the cost because I have not prepared for such.
So what are you saying? Where there's cost that you don't know, you're going to bring them back to Parliament?
I can provide that through your office, Chair.
Okay, that's right.
Then when it comes to the other one, which is the engineering changes there, I think there's some kind of a glitch. I don't know where in terms of the communication, because from my recollection, I think that that information was compiled. I need to check why it's not reached.
Mr.
Kwanazi,
which information are you talking about?
I'm talking about the information that was raised by the honorable member in our last...
Mr. Kwanazi and Cruz, which information are you talking about?
I'm talking about the engineering changes that Mr. Menir said is still outstanding, which was requested in this forum, Chair. And then the last one on Mr. Menir, the nuclear biological tour, I don't know whether Kevin would like to respond on that one. Not now, later. Then I'll fill it up. And on the other one of the disability, I think while it's not shown there, I think it's one of the areas that we push to ensure that also it is catered for in our transformation. I think it's just that it's not mentioned strongly there. I agree with what has been said by the honourable member that it is a policy and it has to be taken into consideration. And then the last one, also the HR general manager will deal with the buzzeries to indicate to the honorable member that we give buzzeries throughout the country, including the rural areas as well.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I can just respond and say that the nuclear and chemical and biological warfare requirement for the corvettes was a requirement which was originally part of the corvette requirement when they were acquired, but was not fulfilled due to cost impact. Subsequent to that, there has been developmental work which has been done to prove the technology from local companies, and that was the cause of the project, and that is how it was done. It, as I said, is a developmental project, a technology project, and it's reached the point where it has been proven, but it's not been implemented fully yet. Unfortunately, I don't have any costs to account for today. I don't know what that cost, as I stand here today.
Thanks, Chair. On the follow-up question regarding the security clearances, Chair, there's a two-stage process, Chair. First one is that all the shortlisted candidates will undergo a preliminary security clearance, which is in the form of an interview. You complete the documents. Then, once an appointment is made, that appointment is subject to a candidate obtaining a full security clearance, which gets completed once a candidate or an employee has been appointed. So it's subject, it's conditional appointment, and that's how it works, Chair, because security clearances, they take time. And there are certain committees that meet at a point, at a certain point in time, which then grants the security clearance statuses. And I think that's just the reason for that. Thanks, Chair. On the question of the rural areas, I think we have noted the comments of the honorable member, and it's an area that we, with the stakeholder relations manager, we started discussing also within the context of a CSI. But I can also report to the committee that the vacancies that we had in the last calendar, in fact, this 2010, at the beginning of this year, we went out and advertised those three bursary opportunities that we had in the Sunday time. But one might also say, you know, to what extent do rural people, I mean, really, the Sunday time reaches them. But it's an area that we will look at it and then put the necessary plans, because it's not our intention to exclude any community within the South African context. Thanks, Chair.
David, you're the last one, any other member beyond these two, three, five?
You're okay.
You wanted to say something, sir?
Yes, that's all right. I still think we need to respond on the performance remuneration portion. Our performance remuneration is in terms of our remuneration practice. On an annual basis, we agree goals with the board on which we will be measured and the performance will be calculated. Members should remember that we are basically a service delivery institution and not a profit-making institution. We do have serious funding challenges that we need to sort out, and I think we tried to show earlier to the members what those are and what we are, what the action plans are to address those, being the funding model that we need to revise, the way OnSchool is funded for the service being rendered. So I think although we made a deficit for the past period, it should also be considered that it is not due to not making profit. It's also rendering services that we are not funded for. I think that even though we made a deficit for the past period, if you look at what the budgeted deficit was that was approved, we still made a significant improvement on that figure through proper cost management. So even though, and if the members look at the performance goals as stated there, I think we achieved most of that as agreed to the board. On that basis, performance pay was approved by the board.
Thank you, Zabitolo. And Honorable David, just 2 minutes, 2 minutes. We need to pass on this matter. Thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
I'm noting you,
Chairman. You know, I didn't agree with the answer from Mr. Connors when he was just saying two aspects of the committee. No. But the answer of that young man, excellent. I'm telling you. And I just want advice. That you are talking about Sunday times and so on. My wife, she's there in Brasilia. When you are talking about newspaper, we don't even know what you are talking about. Then you must see Kukuni from Pittsburgh. It's 160 kilo. Meidenberg is 90 kilo. Meidenberg is 140 kilo. Rural area, there's no newspaper. But I think also, Chairman, they must do something also, can also inform our community in rural area. When you are in town and township, you want to do a newspaper. In Zwa, there's no. When did the Honorable Mr. Connor say throw out South Africa? No, I didn't. I didn't dance with him. Because I know in the middle there's a problem. Some people that stay in town, they hear somebody when he talks about Zwa. I'm staying there, I know. I'm still going to in Bush, in Thailand. I know. Thanks very much.
Honorable Mayor, quickly please, just before you come in, honorable members and our guests, on Friday it is the birthday of our chairperson. As you know that we planned to go to Masters, buy some small banana cake for him. We'll send him outside, so when he comes in, we expect you to sing for him. So that's why I'm rushing you to finish. Thank you.
I thought there'd been a coup, but there is actually a reasonable full explanation about FIFA TOMA is still outstanding. I would suggest through you, Chair, if the committee secretary is here, that we agree that we would get as urgently as possible a breakdown of the total payment to FIFA TOMA so that the figures are clear. Maybe that could slide through the chair to the secretary. And then the question of the cost of the sonar system, IRIS-T system, and the NBC system, if that again if that information could be furnished in writing to the committee, and then if the CEO could check that I actually received that information, would be very helpful. Thank you.
The chairperson of the board?
No, on the CIPO TOMO matter, I would be happy to give the committee the breakdown, but Honorable Kekana, the way he summed up our explanation is correct. That is what we were conveying to this committee on how the settlement was reached. I don't know if I need to say more. The matter was before arbitration. At the arbitration, we had a choice to allow the arbitrator to make a decision. Which decision would, either it went our way or his way, would still be followed up beyond that and would cost lots and lots of money because it would have required senior counsel. And this is what I had explained earlier on. The board, therefore, when I was there, I was representing the board. I had to ask for an adjournment and to consult every one of the board members. And once we had agreed as the board members, we could then reach a settlement. Of course, the board had to meet again to ratify what they had given me a mandate on at that arbitration. There was no, well, the award would have been based then on the settlement between Thomas lawyers and our lawyers with our own support and Thomas support. But we are happy to give a breakdown. In any event, it will be there in the next annual report. We have to give those details, so it's not something we can hide. Just for the second.
Thank you, Chair. There's a hand over there from your staff.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify on the issue of the bonuses, the provisional bonuses, performance bonuses, and the payments as such, in relation to the deficit. I think as the board, we are quite a responsible board in terms of if the deficit was to spiral downwards and the deficit go high, we'd get to a situation where we'll have to stop the bonuses, not pay the bonuses. I just wanted to clarify that. It's not actually a contractual bonus that we would run the company down in terms of when the deficit is increasing. That's all I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Honorable members, let me take the opportunity to thank you for the contributions that we have made. But I would like to further express my gratitude to AMCO, management, and the board that they made it possible under the circumstances that we were in as from yesterday, that today, indeed, we do have a progressive meeting. I believe we all have the interests of the country at heart, not because we want to rub each other's egos or what, but because we all take our work and the security of our people very seriously. A special thanks again to Honorable Meunier to understand when the chairperson tries to call him to order with regards to the questions that he was asking. I thank you, Kenneth.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.